Every committee to order. Welcome, everyone. This is a continuation of a hearing that we began this afternoon on Senate Bill 2 and Senate Bill 500. We have a lot of people tonight who want to testify, and my goal is to have everyone on both sides have a chance to say their piece. And in order to accomplish that, we're going to have very, very tight time limits. And so for those of you testifying, as the testimony goes on, if you simply want to come up and associate yourself with somebody else's testimony, that's fine. You will be on the record. I am going to leave the record open if people want to submit testimony and to elaborate on your comments or make comments if you don't get a chance to testify. So what we're going to do is, as we did this afternoon, we're going to start off with two panels. And the people, each panel will be limited to 10 minutes, and I will enforce that limit. And so we will start out
Madam
with
Chair,
the
could I do this thing first?
Oh, yes, yes, just a half a second.
Okay.
So we will start off with a panel of proponents, then a panel of opponents, and then we'll move into public testimony, one pro, one con, until we run out of one side or the other. And hopefully get everybody in and out. And those of you who feel like you might have more to say, please feel free to put it on the record, but understand that if you go over your time, somebody at the end will be left off, because I'm going to close this hearing promptly at 9 o'clock. If we stick to our timetable, we can achieve that. So before we get going, Senator Cruz, you had something you wanted to put in the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for accommodating me. I also have a committee downstairs at the time, and Governor Kitzhaber is testifying, and I kind of want to get to it. So I'll be bouncing back and forth if it's okay. I have a letter from Senator Beyer. Says, Dear Senator Cruz, attached is a copy of the letter I requested from Ellis, Lye, and McKinstry, PLLC, with the help of Oregon Family Council. Ellis, Lye, and McKinstry, PLLC, are experts in litigations relating to religious freedoms. I wasn't prepared to present the letter to the Judiciary Committee at the 1 o'clock hearing. The letter addresses a number of questions discussed by both members of the committee and witnesses. I have taken the liberty of highlighting a few of the key components of the letter that would be very helpful for the committee to hear you, meaning me, read into the hearing for the record. I've also included copies for each committee member, and I'll read the highlighted portions. We are Seattle law firm, of which a substantial area of our practice involves evaluating and defending the First Amendment interest of religious organizations in state and federal courts, including churches, schools, colleges, parachurch organizations, and other institutions. We have attorneys that practice in Oregon and Washington. You ask us to provide a legal opinion regarding the constitutionality of proposed SB 2 and SB 500, particularly whether the religious organization exemptions contained therein adequately protect religious organizations from improper government interference pursuant to the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. We conclude the exemptions do not. The proposed legislation violates the Free Exercise and Establishment Clauses and Equal Protection Clauses and the Right of Expressive Association. For all the major world religions, for example, Islam, Christianity, Hinduism, and Judaism, religious identity is expressed in part through the teaching and practice of a moral code, which in the case of each of these faiths includes a prohibition against homosexual activity. Religious organizations which hold this view will regard employing individuals in any capacity who openly engage in homosexual activity as incompatible with this doctrine. There is a further constitutional infirmity with SB 2 and SB 500. The religious organization exemption found in Section 3, paragraphs 4 and 5 of SB 2 protects a religious organization only if the employment, housing, and use of facilities are closely related to the primary purposes of the organization and not connected with a commercial or business activity that has no necessary relationship to the church or institution or its primary purpose. SB 500 contains the latter limiting phrase as well. It is impossible with any reasonable degree of certainty for an organization to determine which activities would be deemed by a court to relate to a primary purpose of the organization and not connected with unrelated business activity. Not only would a religious organization's free exercise rights be substantially impaired, the language entangles the courts in defining the primary purpose of a religious organization in violation of the Establishment Clause. Nowhere in the legislation are primary purpose or no necessary relationship to the church or institution defined, nor are they definable. Thus, to require, as these laws would, a religious organization to guess which of its employment positions, housing, and facilities do not relate to a primary purpose or are unnecessary violates the religion clauses. Moreover, the exemptions do not provide equal protection to religious groups that are not sectarian religious organizations. There is no rational difference between an affiliated organization and one that isn't for the purpose of the exemption, for example. There is no basis for excluding parachurch organizations such as the Salvation Army and Young Life from the exemption and including a Baptist school or Muslim humanitarian relief agency simply because they are sectarian. The exemption for bona fide church or sectarian religious organizations also violates the Equal Protection Clause. In Boy Scouts versus Dale, 2000, the court held that applying New Jersey's public accommodation law to require the Boy Scouts to admit a homosexual and gay rights activist as an assistant scoutmaster violated the Boy Scouts' First Amendment right to expressive association because his mere presence in the organization would significantly burden Boy Scouts' desire to not promote homosexual conduct as a legitimate form of behavior. And the state's interest embodied in New Jersey's law did not justify such a severe intrusion. Requiring a religious organization to employ those involved in homosexual activity in all positions, but those related to its primary purpose, would impair the organization's ability to express a clear and consistent viewpoint that it regards such conduct as incompatible with its doctrine and moral standards. To avoid the above constitutional pitfalls, there are other states that have successfully exempted religious organizations from the purview of the anti-discrimination laws. If you would like us to research and provide examples of such exemptions that would properly protect churches and religious organizations in Oregon, we would be happy to do so. Yours very truly. And I have copies here for the committee, and thank you for allowing me to put that on the record.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. And also for the record, Senator Beyer would have been here tonight as vice chair of this committee. He had a previously scheduled town hall that he was unable to reschedule, and that is why he's not here. Senator Brzezanski is also involved in another committee as a committee business and will be appearing later. We've got a lot going on in this building tonight. So we will start off now with our first panel, Ashlyn Coughlin, Dave Fedanke, and Lynn Lundquist.
And Madam Chair, we are open, our committee's open on both bills, is that correct?
Yeah, we are continuing the hearing on Senate Bill 2 and Senate Bill 500. I will say that the focus of our efforts are on Senate Bill 2, so if you could focus most of your comments to that, that would be great.
I'll be back as soon as I can.
Chair Burdick and committee members, my name is Ashlyn Coughlin, and I'm the interim executive director of Basic Rights Oregon, the state's largest advocacy group for the rights of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. Our mission is to eliminate discrimination based on sexual orientation, and we see Senate Bill 2 as a powerful step towards that end. Today you'll hear testimony from many individuals who support Senate Bill 2. However, there are those whose testimony will not be heard today. You will not hear from gay and transgender people who live in places where they feel so unsafe that they have no choice but to live a lie or hide at home. You will not hear from parents whose communities and churches would judge them so harshly that they cannot tell anyone their beloved children are gay. You will not hear from the countless people who have left our state to live in places that protect them and their families from discrimination by statute or from those who choose not to live here so long as nothing changes. On behalf of those people, I would like to say the following about Senate Bill 2. Oregon law books doesn't prohibit evicting a good tenant denying a patron servicer at a restaurant, or even firing an employee just because of a person's real or perceived sexual orientation. This is not an academic point. As you will hear today, Oregonians throughout the state do experience discrimination based on sexual orientation in housing, employment, health care, education, and everyday life. And while anti-discrimination laws have been implemented successfully in 12 municipalities across Oregon and have yielded positive results, this approach has created a patchwork of laws. Senate Bill 2 creates uniform law across Oregon so that protection from discrimination doesn't depend on one zip code, and the rules for employers, landlords, business owners are clear and consistent across Oregon. Despite what opponents may claim, Senate Bill 2 is good for all Oregonians. Senate Bill 2 is good for business, as it will help Oregon attract the best and the brightest to our workforce. It contains a thoughtful, explicit, and clear religious exemption, carefully crafted to protect the religious freedoms enshrined in Oregon's Bill of Rights and the federal Constitution. It will make our students safer from discrimination, but does not in any way alter school curriculum guidelines. Discrimination against Oregonians, gay Oregonians, is real. After 34 years, it's time for this legislation to be enacted and to enshrine Oregonians' basic values of opposing discrimination in Oregon state statute. Basic Rights Oregon urges your support of Senate Bill 2.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Lundquist.
Thank you, Chairman Burdick. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you this evening. I'm Lynn Lundquist, President of the Oregon Business Association. Oregon Business Association is made up of members who seek a legislative agenda that rises above maybe the narrowly defined, what you'd think is a typical business association. We simply believe that we should work for policies that create the framework and the environment in which businesses can be successful. So we look at it more of a macro approach, if you will. This is a bill that certainly applies to that arena. We have come to the decision through a committee process and the board of directors and that committee that reached a consensus, a very broad consensus, that it is now time for Oregon to step forward and pass Senate Bill 2. In trying to come to this consensus, it's not always easy, and I'm very proud that we have very rural areas, we have the urban area, and together we came to the decision that this was the right thing to do. It's not only right for Oregon, but it's right for the business community, as we are in a very competitive world. We need the kind of labor force that is appropriate and qualified to lead us forward in that venue. And so we need all kinds of employees. We do not want to discriminate with them. I heard earlier this afternoon that it's not a big problem. The business community maybe shouldn't be particularly concerned, or the community shouldn't be concerned, because it's not a big problem. I believe that's true. But let me say this. It's a big problem if it affects you individually. I happen to have a nephew that is gay who lost his job simply because of that and for no other reason. So it is very, very critical, in our opinion, for the future of Oregon that we keep this broad bringing people into the fold as much as possible. Let me just close by saying this. Having been through this issue in 1997, I do not want this session to do the same as we did then. Not only did we lose the discrimination bill, we lost charter schools, and we lost primarily our transportation for that particular session. That is wrong. This is not something that I believe should be traded. This is an issue that should stand on its own. And I just would encourage your committee and the session in general to make sure that they keep that focus. This is not about what we can give up for something else. This is about what's right for Oregon, and it's right today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to have to go to another hearing that I'm scheduled, so I apologize for leaving. I appreciate the opportunity to come at this time.
We appreciate you coming. Thank you. Mr. Chair, we have just under 4.5 minutes. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm David Fedanke, Executive Director of the ACLU of Oregon. And as Mr. Hinkle said this afternoon, we have one ACLU representative or another has been testifying on this issue since 1973 in the legislature. I'm a relative newcomer. I've only been working for ACLU since 1982 and working on these issues. I was involved in the passage of the hate crimes legislation in 1989 and a number of other proposals that have not passed in between. Like those earlier proposals and the hate crime statute that's in effect today, it provides protection on the basis of sexual orientation. And it's important for people to understand that we are not creating a protection in Oregon law with Senate Bill 2 or Senate Bill 500 that would only apply to people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. It will apply to all Oregonians and prohibit discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, regardless of what your orientation is. It will protect you if you are heterosexual as much as it will protect you if you are homosexual, bisexual, or transgender. And that's very important for people to understand, because to do otherwise in the law would itself be unconstitutional. It would be granting special rights to one class of citizens over another. The kind of special protections that are prohibited in both the Oregon and federal constitution. In Oregon, Article 1, Section 20 says that no law shall be passed granting to any citizen or class of citizens privileges or immunities which upon the same terms shall not equally belong to all citizens. All this bill does is guarantee equal treatment under the law for all Oregonians regardless of their sexual orientation. That is neither more nor less than the right for all Oregonians to be hired or fired based on their ability to do the job rather than because of their perceived or actual sexual orientation. To be able to be in a public place, such as a restaurant or a movie theater, without being excluded because of their actual or perceived sexual orientation, and on throughout the statute. Now, Chair, in addition to my written testimony, I wanted to address two issues that have come up in today's hearing at this point. Excuse me. The first is the issue of the religious exception in Senate Bill 2. This is a significantly broader exception than was included in Senate Bill 1000 2 years ago. It is significantly broader than the language in Senate Bill 500 introduced this session. This language is a direct result of the testimony that the Oregon Farm Family Council and others made to the governor's task force. The governor's office insisted on a broad exemption for religious institutions. And here in Oregon, unlike under the federal constitution, you can distinguish between a church or other place of worship and other kinds of religious institutions, like schools or other religious organizations. Under the Oregon Constitution, our Oregon Supreme Court has made clear that you cannot distinguish between different types of religious institutions. If you provide an exception under the law for places of worship, you also have to provide exceptions for other religious institutions. And that's what this language does. And as I say, I believe it is quite broad, that indeed it is broader than the exemptions or exceptions that would be required by either the Federal First Amendment or the Oregon Bill of Rights. And the other issue I wanted to address briefly is the issue of affirmative action. Because the earlier representative, Mr. Graham, from the Oregon Family Council, I think took one section of the bill and pointed out some language in that particular section, and it was Section 22 of Senate Bill 2. But ignored all of the other Oregon laws that relate to affirmative action that are not amended by this legislation before you tonight. And it was a very conscious decision do not add sexual orientation to the list of categories in Oregon affirmative action law. The particular statute that is included in Senate Bill 2 has to do, which is in Section 22, which is ORS 240.306, is the statute that deals with recruitment of and selection of employees in state jobs for classified employees. The portion of that statute that's being amended is the portion related to hiring of state employees and recruitment of state employees, not the portion related to affirmative action. Based on the language in the statute, we believe it's crystal clear that there is nothing in this provision of Senate Bill 2 that would either encourage or require the state to engage in affirmative action on the basis of sexual orientation. In fact, the statute talks about giving proper regard in recruitment to an individual's privacy. And indeed, it was that interest that led to the victory in ACLU's challenge to Ballot Measure 8 from 1988, which was the statute that is being repealed in this bill, that prohibited state executive branch officials from prohibiting sexual orientation discrimination. In that decision, the Oregon Court of Appeals threw out that statute on the basis that state employees have a privacy interest and a free speech interest in choosing whether or not to speak about their sexual orientation. So it would be unconstitutional under the Oregon Bill of Rights for state officials to require either state employees or candidates for state employment to disclose their sexual orientation.
Thank you, Mr. Fidenke. You're out of time. In fact, you're 3 minutes over.
Thank you very much.
But I did have one question on your point. The other side will get another 3 minutes as well for their panel. I did have one question on the point you made where it protects everyone. What you're saying is if I'm an employer and I happen to be gay and I only want to hire other gay people, if I make that a condition of employment, are you saying
you'd be violating this statute if it becomes law? Absolutely.
So a heterosexual,
just as an employee who is disciplined or fired because their employer thinks they may be gay would also be protected even if that employee is straight.
Or if their employer assumed they were gay and thought that was a positive thing and they turned out to be heterosexual and they were discriminated against, they would also be protected.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next, I don't have anybody else to ask questions, so our next panel will be Herb Gray and Ray Young, and you will have 13 minutes instead of 10. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I guess that's not really applicable right now. My name is Pastor Ray Young. I'm currently the administrator of East Hill Church out in Gresham. We have approximately 6,000 average attendees on any one weekend. We minister a lot to individuals who are suffering with drugs, alcohol, anger, and sex addictions, single parents, and, of course, the lost. Before my current work at the church, I maintained a private practice as an attorney for almost 20 years, 13 years of that as an attorney at the Portland firm of Gewurz Menashe, and I left there as a partner in 2002. Over the last 4 years, I've also had the privilege of speaking to thousands of pastors and lay leaders across the United States on legal issues regarding churches and their exposure. One of the biggest concerns I hear from them is how states are fairly careless in how they formulate their statutes and put churches and religious institutions and organizations at risk for being sued for simply practicing their beliefs. When I first read SB 500 and SB 2 this last weekend, I have to admit I've been sick for that virus for the last week. It's kind of kept me a little foggy. But when I read it, it was very clear to me, and I'll focus as the chair wanted on most on SB 2, which is the wording that we get into real trouble. It's the second section there under the religious exemption part. And I'm going to be basing most of my comments in regards to the religious exemption issue.
Okay, and Mr. Gray, we do have your written testimony. If you read all of your written testimony, it will take up all the time. So
that's why I'm Mr. Young.
I'm sorry.
And you should have mine.
Okay.
And I've X'd out a lot of it. I just want to get to the high points here.
Yes, true. Thanks.
Right. You know, in terms of this, a lot of states have tried doing this and passed sexual orientation protection laws, and they put in exemptions with varying degrees of success. The concerns that Oregonians of faith have are what could happen here is what happened in many other places around the United States. In Washington, D.C., a federal court has told a private Catholic college that it has to have equal access for gay rights groups. In New York, a private school teacher at a religious school can pursue a claim against the church for firing when she admittedly was involved in adulterous behavior. In Minnesota, a court has ruled that a church can only refuse to hire a homosexual person if it's for a ministry position or a bona fide job requirement that the position be heterosexual. We've also got the case in Oregon where Martha Walter, a current Supreme Court justice, argued for the belief that a Catholic private school should be required to admit individuals who have no belief in their practices whatsoever in terms of gay rights. In fact, Mr. Vedenke in that case made comments regarding that he just thought a Catholic school should be another place of public accommodation, shouldn't be protected at all. That's the kind of attacks we're facing, and that's why the language we put in SB2 has got to be amazingly broad and amazingly all-inclusive, because I need to make it very clear that if you allow any language in these statutes that give any wiggle room, I know lawyers, and I'm sure the chair knows lawyers, you know, they love being creative, they love finding any way around and any way to sue, and if you lead words in there like closely connected or related to a primary purpose, or primary, that whole necessary to the primary purpose issue, who gets to decide the primary purpose for a church or religious organization? If you leave it in here, the courts get to decide. For 200 years, we have been able to handle a wonderful separation between church and states because courts have enacted what's generally called ecclesiastical abstention, which is we're not going to get involved in telling a church or believers what they believe. What you have written right now in SB2 is going to blow the doors off that and allow courts to start deciding what is a primary purpose and what's connected to it. And we can't allow that. The one thing that all the statutes that deal with this kind of thing, and I've read about every statute in the United States dealing with sexual orientation protections and the religious exemptions. One of the most important things that I find is you have to have an extremely broad definition. And the Federal Non-Discrimination Act, which was brought up in the mid-90s and was never passed but got broad support, was very good at having a very broad definition. Nevada is another state that's done a wonderful job in their statute with protecting those under sexual orientation statutes. They've simply said, in effect, any 501(c)(3) organization, period, does not have to fall under any of the protections under sexual orientation. Washington also has a similarly inclusive statute. What we need to provide here is a simple definition that simply says this whole class of institutions and churches and religious organizations are exempted from all coverage. We don't need to add these particular languages about primary purpose. And that's one of our biggest concerns is that Oregon, unlike several other Western states, seems to want to give a lot more words and definition, which again allows rife for different political and judicial interpretations. As I've specified very clearly in the written material I provided, is we need to provide very broad definition of what's allowed and what's not allowed. We can't differentiate between different employees. Again, I'll refer back to the ACLU has taken the position that a janitor at a church should not be protected under statutes like this. They should get to be hired as gay individuals or not gay individuals, and we shouldn't be about protection. One thing that's real critical to the faith community, Madam Chair, and it's real important, is what we live 24/7, whether it's home, whether it's private, whether it's at work. I give a speech to everybody who comes and employ at the church, and I'm responsible for, say, the janitors. I don't care if you're stacking chairs or you're preaching on the pulpit. You are a witness of Jesus Christ, and when you're out in the world, you're one of our witnesses. And if we're required to hire individuals for non-ministry positions or somebody says not our primary purpose, they still work and they're still employed by the church or the religious organization. If we have to do that, that's going to infringe our freedoms, because as much as we love homosexual and gay individuals, we believe this is a sin, just like adultery, just like premarital sex, and you're subject to discipline in your workplace for those things. We have that happen all the time, whether it's, you know, adultery, whether it's homosexual, etc. We have to do those issues. If you don't give us a broad exemption, such as Nevada or Washington, you're simply asking for churches and religious organizations to be sued, and I don't want a court determining what a primary purpose is. I don't know if you're keeping time for me or not. My watch isn't real good.
You've used a little over half the time.
All righty. Well, Well, I'm going to wrap up here then real fast so that Mr. Gray can finish up for us. It's real important that this statute has to be very broad in the definition of the organization covered. We have to be as inclusive as the actions. I mean, there should be no actions at all that a church or religious organization can take that should be exempted from the exception that we give them. They need to have that broad coverage because we need to make sure our religious liberties are protected. And if you allow the language that's in there now to get passed through to the floor and get signed by the governor, you're going to get churches and religious organizations sued left and right. I've seen it, and I've seen it in other states, and we're setting ourselves up if we don't back up and give a nice, clear, broad, short, one sentence or two is all we need, not all that's in 4 and 5 section right under section 3. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and member of the committee, my name is Herb Gray. I'm a lawyer in Beaverton. A substantial part of my practice is involved in First Amendment litigation. And I want to echo the comments that have been made by Mr. Young and others about the insufficiency of the religious exemption, and that's what I'm going to be concentrating my attention on. Although SB 2 is broader in scope because it includes housing and public accommodation as well as employment, the fact of the matter is that the religious exemptions in both of these bills are far too limited. And arguments to the effect that this is broader than it was 2 years ago in SB 1000 are true, but arguments to the effect that they are comprehensive and therefore cover all religious organizations appropriately are absolutely untrue. And as pointed out in the letter that Senator Cruz shared from Ellis Lee and McKinstry, just want to point out that as both the existing religious exemption in ORS Chapter 659A and the proposed religious exemptions that are part of these bills on their face violate the Free Exercise Clause, the Establishment Clause, the Equal Protection Clause, and the Expressive Association rights guaranteed in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And Mr. Fedanke even referred to the fact that Oregon even affords greater protections in many of those areas than the federal Constitution does. So what is the problem that we have with this? Well, we have the statements that have been referred to about undefined terms like a bona fide church and a sectarian religious organization. What is absolutely missing from the list, whether you look at the laundry list of groups that are specified in SB 500 or the open-ended part of SB 2, is it does not, those protections do not extend to parachurch organizations like Union Gospel Mission, Salvation Army, Young Life, or anything like that. If there are humanitarian relief organizations that are organized by churches, for example, they would not be protected by any of this. Now, the fact of the matter is that there have been three occasions in recent memory where the Oregon Supreme Court has looked at limited religious exemptions. And what they have determined in each case is that where the religious exemptions do not extend to all religious organizations, rather than extending those religious exemptions to cover the additional religious organizations, they have struck them down entirely. What does that mean? That means a limited religious exemption, such as what appears in both of these bills, is in effect no religious exemption at all, because it is a foregone conclusion the Oregon Supreme Court would strike it down. Secondly, and this is extremely important to the understanding of the committee, these bills, by the terms they use in the religious exemptions, absolutely positively guarantees religious or government intrusion into the legitimacy and the sincerity of religious belief. And that is something that has never, ever, ever been tolerated in the Republic. The Establishment Clause absolutely positively bars that, and the letter from Ellis Lee and McKinstry goes into greater detail in explaining how that fails the Lemon versus Kurtzman test. It absolutely positively represents government intrusion into the legitimacy and the sincerity of religious belief and practice. That is something that cannot be tolerated under any circumstances. I want to echo what Mr. Young said with respect to the exemptions in other states and even under federal law. In my written testimony, I present that even the Title VII, which is the federal provision that has a religious exemption, is much more expansive than what is contained in Oregon law, either existing or proposed. I'd also like to point out, and I don't know if this has been touched on or not, but the both bills incorporate provisions that talk about persons who aid or abet the kind of conduct that's prescribed by these bills. And it says that aiding and abetting is an unlawful practice. Well, who gets to decide what is aiding and abetting? And if it's a Sunday school teacher, if it's a pastor, if it's somebody in a group like Union Gospel Mission who says, you know what, you have to straighten your life out, you have to go in a different direction, those people are absolutely positively in the gun sights of being deemed aiders and abettors. And that's already happened in Canada. It's already happened in Sweden. And in both of those situations, there was a great deal of publicity about the fact that people were subjected to liability, sometimes criminal sanctions, for having the audacity to speak what they understood as religious truth.
You're down to 1 minute, Mr.
Okay, Bear. Thank you. The last thing that I'd like to point out with respect to the bill is the exemption from requiring primary and secondary schools to get into a curriculum, that the same sort of program of public education that the bills expressly provide. Well, the question that I have before you is, if the government purpose is so compelling, why would we make an exception for the public schools and set out a different set of rules? And I can say without fear of contradiction again that if you get into talking about compelling state interests to justify the intrusions on religious liberty, one of the things that is deemed to be an important indicia of the seriousness of that government interest is it applied across the board? And if it's not, it's usually deemed not to be a compelling state interest and therefore fails scrutiny. In short, neither bill fixes the shortcomings that already exist in current law, and they go on to actually, in my judgment, make it worse. And I appreciate the committee's time tonight.
Thank you very much. Senator Walker, thank you very much, and thank you for adhering to the time limits. We have a whole lot more sign-ups, so I, again, emphasize a 2-minute absolute limit, and if you can do it in 1 minute, I wish we had some prizes up here. Here's a piece of chocolate.
Oh, that's mine! Chocolate! Just because you're on Lent and you can't eat it.
Okay. James Cox, Tiffany Harris, and Carl Rohde. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you. Should I go in
just
absence?
Go ahead and start. I called three at a time so that the other two can make it up while the first one's talking.
Madam Chair, may I begin by congratulating you again on winning the Alice B. Toeclipse Award Saturday night from the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. As a fellow awardee of that, I know how much of an honor that is, so congratulations.
Don't encourage her.
I'm a former city councilor from Lake Oswego. In fall of 2004, we passed the ordinance that you are considering here, making us one of the 12 cities to adopt these the protections. And it was a very supportive and experience. We had no one testifying in opposition, and in fact, there was only one letter to the editor in opposition to it because he objected to our calling it a civil right, that in fact, because homosexuality is a choice.
Could you identify yourself?
Yes, Carl Rohde, okay. Now Portland, Oregon. I would argue that the vast majority of Oregonians are, in fact, surprised to find out that it is not protected, that people can be refused service, can be kicked out of their apartment, can be fired from their job. Most Oregonians had no idea that this is true and would like to see that changed. Now, as a Republican, I am strongly supportive of this because of my beliefs in individual freedom. And in a party that was formed to free the slaves and a party that actually was at the forefront of the women's suffrage movement. In fact, historically, the historical underpinnings of the Republican Party would suggest that they should be on the forefront of gay rights, but in fact, for whatever reason, they don't find themselves in that position. I would encourage that we do not, that we pass this bill to eliminate the patchwork that goes throughout the state. This is good for the tourism industry in the state of Oregon, and it's good for the economy as a whole, as companies look around the United States for places where they can locate either their headquarters or ancillary businesses, which are a tolerant and accepting location to locate those. Now, I will conclude with the fact that I am, having listened to a number of the arguments in opposition to this, had we replaced homosexual with women or with black, it would have been the same arguments that were used during those civil rights struggles. They would quote chapter and verse from the Bible on why, in fact, it is supported to be discriminatory towards these individuals, and I would hope that we would not see this continue in this generation. I would hope that we will have learned from the past.
Thank you
for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Ms. Harris.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. What is my time limit this evening?
2 minutes max.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
1 minute, you get a prize.
All right.
Won't be my chocolate, Ms. Harris.
No time for small talk, members of the committee. It's great to be back here in the Capitol. As you know, I was the administrator for the Rules Committee last session. I'm also an employment law attorney at Oregon's second largest law firm. Not here to speak, obviously, for my law firm or my clients, but certainly my testimony will draw from my experiences litigating employment cases and also my experiences here last session. So I think I have time to make 1.5 points for you. Point number one is that Oregon's experience with laws protecting gays and lesbians from discrimination at the local level has been positive. And the reason why I say that is that in May of 2005, I and perhaps some of you sat through 6 hours of public testimony on Senate Bill 1000. And I was looking for a particular type of witness to address the Rules Committee that evening. I was looking for the witness who could come before the committee and say, Rules Committee, I know what I'm talking about because I live in one of the 9 cities where we already have a non-discrimination law on the books. And I want to tell you, Rules Committee, that my real-life business or my real-life kids' school has been hurt by this law in a real-life way. Well, no such witness appeared. And again, that was 6 hours of public testimony. Oregon's experiment with local non-discrimination laws is now in its 14th year. And even with the benefit of every mailing list, every carpool, every advertisement, opponents of non-discrimination legislation could not recruit one live witness to show up at that public hearing and share a real-life story about a real-life harm that they had suffered as a result of living in a local community where lawmakers had decided, enough, it's no longer permissible to discriminate against gays, lesbians, or transgender people in the places where we work or where we live or where we do business.
Okay, you're out of time.
Thank you.
I have one question of Mr. Rohde.
Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you. What year did Lake Oswego pass your
order? 2004.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will call Dick Younce and Devin Lawson. Welcome.
Good evening. Shall we just take off?
Yes, please. 2 minutes max.
Madam Chairman and Senators, we thank you for the opportunity to just give some comments in regard to Senate Bill 2. My testimony today is very personal. I don't belong to an organization. I'm not a vice president of anything. It's just from a personal standpoint. But I was born in 1927, and I've lived through some tough times in our nation's history. I've lived through the Depression time, the World War II, Korean War. In fact, I served in both of those wars. The Vietnam War, the assassination of President Kennedy. And I could go on and on, but as tough and terrible as times and conditions have been, there can be no comparison, in my view, to the immoral conditions that we face today. And I just make it for the record, I have not lived a pure life. I've lived a long ways from that. But however, the homosexual lifestyle that is now being proposed to be legalized and literally forced into our businesses, our families, our schools, and our churches is totally beyond my belief. As I've mentioned, I've lived through some very tough times, but this proposed legislation literally breaks my heart. Yes, I'm part of the Over the Hill gang, but this causes me deep concern for our young people today, our children, and our children's children. This proposed legislation, senators, if passed, I truly believe will destroy our young people and mark it down. If our young people are destroyed, our nation will be destroyed. Okay, and we will have allowed it to happen. I plead with you to protect our children, to protect our state by standing, and for our children's sake, your children's sake, vote no on Senate Bill 2.
Thank you for your testimony.
My name is Delmer Lawson. Basically, I'm not really, I'm just here in opposition to this bill. Hopefully you can hear me. My heart's pounding a little bit loud. I hope
we can hear you. You're doing great.
Once again, I'll just read my statement and then just a quick thought. I'm not sure at what point in our nation or our state where the minority on a position should rule. And while in this room, we're in the minority, and we understand that. The people of this state have spoken more than once that marriage or civil unions for homosexuals is against the will of the majority. Why should the way a person acts be caused to grant them a special status? I'm a little uncertain on that. It's a fearful thing when the legislature puts its own choices ahead of the people they were elected to serve. If the way you choose to force your agenda is to do this thing under the cover of darkness, which many people aren't even aware this is going on right now, it exposes the need to depend on an apathetic people, which many in this state are. And just a quick, I've never been down here in my life. I've never been in this building, but I walk in and I see people with hate on their T-shirt. I don't have hate on anything. If people in the room want to ask me, because I'm against homosexuality, about hate, have them ask my wife's aunt, Aunt Teresa, who works for the city of Tigard. Have them ask Kay and Daryl Nelson, who were the owners of Rogers Variety Stores that I was employed by. I love these people as if Aunt Teresa, I can't think of somebody that I hug more affectionately than her. And people want to tell me I'm filled with hate? Okay, well, I can't change their minds, but I think they need to look inward as far as hate, because if the way that I make a statement and the way that I believe is cause for them to tell me I'm full of hate, I can't change it. It's in their heart. It's their problem.
Thank you, and you're out of time. I'm going to put this up here so I won't have to be the bad guy here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. When you see this go off, you know you're out of time. All right. Now we will have Gloria Holland and Lynn Wilson. And please, everybody, start off by saying your name for the record. That would help us out a lot. Welcome.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, good evening. My name is Gloria Holland. I am a resident of West Salem and a 30-year veteran teacher in the Salem-Kaiser District and a member of Salem Chapter PFLAG, Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. I'm asking you today to vote in favor of Senate Bill 2. As a mother of a lesbian daughter, I want to ensure that she is protected against discrimination in all forms. My daughter's sexual orientation is not a choice any more than yours or mine is a choice. One's sexual orientation is a fundamental and essential part of one's basic being. As an educator, I see a tremendous need to incorporate the language sexual orientation into Oregon's anti-discrimination laws. We are a society that has become very divided in recent years. Yet, as a society, we have attacked the huge issues of racism and sexism with a fervent call to justice. We no longer allow sexual harassment or racial slurs in the schools or the workplace. We no longer tolerate denying a person a job or a room for the night because of the color of their skin or their gender. We in Oregon especially consider ourselves to be kind and thoughtful in our relationships with others. Yet every hour in our schools, Oregon's youth are subjected to outrageous slurs and comments against homosexuals. Our tacit acceptance of this homophobic behavior sends the message to all children that this kind of disrespect, and yes, even hatred, is appropriate in our schools and in society. According to the United States Department of Health and Human Resources in 2004, and I quote, gays account for 30% of all teen suicides, 28% of all dropouts, and 40% of homeless teens. A 2005 Harris survey reports that 90% of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students have been harassed or assaulted during the past school year.
Ms. Holland, I'm afraid you're out of time.
Oh,
but
okay.
We're taking written testimony, so
that's
it
fine.
Looks like you have something that you can leave with the committee.
I certainly can. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now we'll have Larry Hall, Cynthia Wilwork, and Audrey Engel. And then I'm going to start announcing the other ones in advance because we've got people in the overflow room. Next I'll take Susan Shaw and Sophia Hitty. Okay, do we have any of those three that I called? Welcome.
How much time do I have?
2 minutes max.
I have, I want to read this.
You have to identify
too,
yourself for the record, please.
But it's just barely over a page.
Sure, I'll take
and
it.
I can do it in a few.
Just get right up there.
Okay, and if you just start by giving your name for our record.
My name is Larry Hall. I'm a retired attorney. My written thing says attorney at the back, but that's a mistake. It should be say retired attorney. I live in Silverton. This is I'm testifying on my own behalf and on not for any organization. I want to let you know that what my feeling is on this Senate Bill 2 does not contain adequate safeguards, has already been talked, for the rights of Bible-believing Christians. And you'll hear a number of people who identify themselves as pastors and ministers and clerics or churchgoers urge the adoption of this bill and its special protections for those who want to practice and promote homosexuality. They do not represent all who call themselves Christians. You have to keep in mind that there are these two major religions calling themselves by the name of Christian. These clerics are representative of what I would call liberal theology. The second major religion is made up of thousands of us in Oregon with a number of different denominational labels who are convinced that liberal theology teachings are contrary to God's will, and I refer to us as Bible-believing Christians. These are two very different religions. If a conservative evangelical pastor preached what the Bible teaches about homosexuality, couldn't it be said that he's aiding and abetting, as Mr. Gray mentioned before a little bit ago? Of course, it could be. Aiding and abetting discrimination in employment or housing or public accommodations. And why wouldn't a circuit judge who happens to be gay accept that reasoning? In Sweden, Pastor Green was actually sent to jail for reading Bible passages that condemn homosexual practices. Please don't let Oregon be the first American state to allow such a thing. You as legislators must protect and preserve freedom of speech and freedom of religion and not simply count on the courts to do it. Now, I'm going to say...
Mr. Hall, you're out of time, but we
I'm
have
out of
your
time?
Written, yes, but we have your written testimony in front of us.
Okay. That, that seemed like it was a short 2 minutes.
Certainly does. My apologies.
Right.
Okay. Now we'll move on to... Are you Cynthia?
I'm Audrey Engel.
You're Audrey Engel. Okay. Welcome.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Audrey Angle. I work for Representative Thatcher as an intern, but I am here as a private citizen because of my own concerns. To summarize my written testimony, first, there is no widespread problem with discrimination. This is partly because discrimination in the past has dealt with a supposed superiority, but discrimination based on sexual orientation is based on people's religious belief on whether or not homosexual behavior is immorality. This is not the same thing as the discrimination in the past. This is brings my second point, that protecting sexual orientation could lead to restricting religious freedom. In countries with similar laws, it has become a crime to speak against homosexual behavior. I've included a number of examples of this in my written testimony, including some from the U.S. News and World Report. Given the emphasis on equal protection, I believe we must remember that equal protection applies to freedom of religion and speech, as well as freedom to hold a particular job. Third, the religious exemption is unclear and limited. According to the Wall Street Journal, March 6, 2007, the Congress's Civil Rights Act of 1964 is still being debated in the courts to figure out what exactly the religious exemption clause means. If courts are still trying to interpret a law from 1964 with this kind of exemption, we are going to have difficulties with these bills. Fourth, employers do not have a religious exemption freedom. Small business owners and family businesses should not be forced to hire somebody who they believe is engaged in an immoral lifestyle. Likewise, fifth, the housing exemption is limited. It would not include a second home or a home on an adjoining property, even though both would bring a intimacy similar to actually having someone in the owner's home. And finally, sixth, these bills could allow a man to gain access to women's facilities.
Okay, you're out of time now, but thank you.
By claiming that they perceive themselves as a woman. For these reasons, I believe adopting either of these bills is an unwise. Thank you.
Thank you. You got through a lot of material very quickly. I commend you. Thank you. Okay, now we'll have...
Last chair, I just need to make one comment. I'm sorry. Ms. Engel, your point about the 1964 Civil Rights Act, that's not an excuse to not try to right a wrong or make an interpretation that is better. If you don't think it's right, the courts keep working at it, and that doesn't mean that we stop legislating because you don't think it's right. So I applaud your testimony for coming down here and doing it, but I don't think you're accurate on that one. Okay?
Thank you. Susan Shaw and Sophia Hitty. Mm-hmm. And our next witnesses on the other side will be Greg Allen, David Adams, and Adam Boner. Bauer. Sorry about that. Adam Bauer. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Susan Shaw. I'm the Director of Women's Studies and the Director of the Difference, Power, and Discrimination Program at Oregon State University. I'm also an ordained Southern Baptist minister, although I now make my church home in the United Church of Christ. And I come before you today in my capacity as a minister to ask for your support of Senate Bills 2 and 500. Just last week, one of my students was told by her hairstylist that she was no longer welcome in his salon because of the perception that she is gay. Surely no one is willing to make a religious argument that this behavior is acceptable in a democracy. Still, I recognize that good people of faith do disagree on this issue, and I support and respect the right of conservative people to believe as they do. As a progressive Christian, I personally believe that sexual diversity is a gift of God, and that lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people are fully loved and accepted by God. I do not, however, ask you to support these bills on the basis of my religious convictions. State law ought not be built on the basis of religious convictions, not mine, nor anyone else's. Rather, I ask your support of these bills on the basis of our state's constitution that promises equality under the law to all Oregonians. Senate Bills 2 and 500 offer sufficient protections to preserve the religious freedoms of those who oppose it. I only ask that the same protections that guard against religious discrimination be extended to protect all of Oregon's citizens, regardless of sexual identity. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to...
I just wanted to say something really quickly. My name is Sophia Hitty. I'm legislative assistant to Senator Walker. But I just wanted to come up here and say that I don't feel like some of the groups that have come in represent every religious person in the state, and I want to make that point. I'm Catholic, and I fully support Senate Bill 2, and that is why I called Susan Shaw. I wanted her to also have a voice coming from a religious standpoint that they can't claim. They can't claim the views of every church. So I wanted to say that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Our next witnesses will be Greg Allen, just two of them, Greg Allen and David Adams. And then we'll move from them to Martha Pellegrino and Jim Van Dyke for the proponents. We'll try that. I apologize. I sit on another committee, and they need me for a vote right now, so I'm going to turn the gavel over to Senator Walker, and we'll proceed there. And I will be back soon.
Does that mean the thing won't get turned on?
No. No such luck.
My name is Greg Allen. I'm pastor of Bethany Bible Church in Portland, Oregon, and a two-minute presentation is a miracle for a pastor.
Not as much as it is for a legislator.
Well, I wanted to... I really came with a written testimony, and I've turned that over, but I'd prefer to speak from the heart for a moment. As I say, I'm Greg Allen, pastor of Bethany Bible Church in the Portland area. And I just want to share what is fundamental to my convictions. As a pastor and as a Christian, my fundamental principle in life is what the scriptures say. In the words of Martin Luther, my conscience is held captive to the word of God. And so what I do in my ministry and what I do in my life as a pastor is to seek to communicate to people the truth of the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ, which entails a belief in what the Bible says. And as you've already heard from many people, the Bible teaches clearly, although admittedly there's some debate among it, the Bible teaches clearly, in my understanding, that homosexuality is a sin. And as an expression of love, not of hate, but of love, it is my fundamental duty to communicate to people that truth and then point them to the Savior who saves us from sin, Jesus Christ. Now that's fundamental to who I am, and I am willing, frankly, to lay down my life for that cause. But I would like to ask a question and leave enough time for that question to the committee members who are here.
You're looking at...
Here we are, with all who have pieces of chocolate with them. My understanding is that the purpose of this chapter is to protect people from discrimination and to advance the cause of equality. My question is this. If this is passed, what I just described, I can say in my church, and the people in my church can say and believe. But the moment we step out the door of the church, we would be in violation of saying those same things. Is that correct?
I can't answer a legal question for you, Mr. Allen.
It's not a legal question. I think it's a pretty basic, actually, fundamental question regarding...
The issue here is equality,
mm-hmm.
non-discrimination for all Oregonians.
Would I not then be
discriminated
against them?
Whether they're in your church or outside of your church, all Oregonians are non-discriminated against. And if you read the bill...
I did.
You will see that there's a religious exemption, which I actually don't think there needs to be one, but under the Constitution of the United States of America,
mm-hmm.
you got it.
But my question is, I hope I still have some time, is that if I speak that within the confines of what this chapter says, I'm speaking it in my church, if I speak those same things outside the church, it appears on the surface I'm in violation of the law.
Well, we'll ask an attorney for that interpretation.
I would appreciate
that
clarification.
Thank you for your testimony. Where is Mr. Adams? David Adams had been called up at the same time as you. Okay, he's off the list. Do you know who she called? Now we're going to the proponents. And she she listed them. Oh, Martha Pellegrino, and the note was Martha had to leave, but Jim is here. Jim Van Dyke from the city of Portland. Can you come up, Jim? And let's see. Scoop Shepherd. Hi.
Hi, good evening. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Martha Pellegrino did have to leave because she was teaching some students today at the Eugene at 7 o'clock. What we hope to do today is just within the two-minute time period is briefly share some details about Portland's own non-discrimination ordinance. I've handed out a letter signed by every member of the Portland City Council supporting the legislation that's before you. That legislation was adopted in 1991 based on sexual orientation, and in 2001 it was amended to include gender identity. On both of those occasions, the City Council had heard lots of testimony about discrimination in our community. I would like to take the rest of my time, however, just to talk a little bit about the way our ordinance works, which is very similar to the legislation that you have before you. The enforcement provisions of the city's ordinance basically parallel current state law. Under current state law, a person alleging prohibited discrimination files a complaint with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. That is the way the Portland City ordinance works. The interplay between administrative and judicial remedies is the same under the Portland ordinance as it would be under the proposed state law. In fact, the City of Portland executed a contract with Boley to investigate complaints under the city's ordinance, which is the same procedure that would be followed if this law was adopted. What we have found is that there have not been an overwhelming number of claims based on the city's ordinance. In fact, I think over a six-year average, over the last 6 years, maybe we've had two claims a month submitted to the Bureau of Labor and Industries. That doesn't mean that discrimination doesn't exist, because our office frequently gets called from employers asking for assistance and advice as to what the city's ordinance means. We often give that to them, and once they find out what's legally required, things are resolved without people having to go make a claim to the Bureau of Labor and Industries.
Okay, and your time is up.
Thank you.
And I have your written testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Shepherd.
For the record, Duke Shepherd, Oregon AFL-CIO. Thank you, Chair Walker. Given the Oregon AFL-CIO's role as an advocate for and representative of working people throughout Oregon, and specifically our 100,000-plus members who include workers of every class being considered within this legislation, let me first address employment. We believe that so long as someone is qualified to do a job, and so long as they pose no danger to other people in terms of workplace safety, they should be allowed to do the job without discrimination, without harassment, without fear of reprisal. More broadly, the AFL-CIO believes discrimination based on sexual orientation is inconsistent with our nation's fundamental values of equal opportunity and equal treatment under the law. We support extending the guarantee of basic civil rights to all persons without regard to sexual orientation in public and private employment, housing, credit, public accommodations, and public services. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. That was short and sweet, both of you. I appreciate it. Okay, we'll now switch to the opponents. This is last call for Adam Bauer. Mike Schulberg, I think is the how I pronounce that. And you, sir?
Adam Bauer.
Okay, great. And Stephen Williams.
Madam Chair and committee, for the record, my name is Adam Bauer. I'm a private citizen. It already has been mentioned that this bill would provide insufficient protection for religious institutions. I just want to say that in one small area, leaving the decision of what is closely connected to a church will come down to the decision of judges, and small ambiguities may be exploited in later years. Earlier there was some laughter about some extreme examples given by Mr. Graham, and I just want to say that while those may have seemed funny at the time, there is precedent for extremism where laws have been misused or misapplied years after they've been implemented. Also, equality does not equal special rights. Where minority is not usually based on personal choice but on unchangeable features, i.e. race, disability, etc. Many discrimination people might consider discrimination based on appearance or skills also to be in the job, in the job arena, where a person who doesn't have the same appearance but the same skills might be discriminated against. Homosexuality is a choice. It has been proven by many people who have come out of the homosexual community. Anyone is born with a choice to choose. Those who make that choice shouldn't enjoy any special elevated rights over those who choose otherwise. Choices on education, other lifestyle choices, also affect things such as employment, and none of those other choices enjoy any protections. This bill also might be a limitation of rights based on decisions and choices other people might decide in their private business or private organizations of those with differing views. Would a pro-choice organization hire somebody who is pro-life? Would that be discrimination? Or would that be their freedom to hire whom they choose? If our laws reflect our values, as mentioned earlier, Measure 36, which we passed 2 years ago by the people of Oregon, amended our Constitution to make marriage between one man and one woman. Are we going to listen to the people of Oregon? Not on discrimination, but on what we believe are Christian moral values.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Appreciate the testimony. If you have written testimony, please be sure to submit it to the clerk. Yes, sir.
My name is Stephen Williams from Bend, Oregon. The House and Senate Judiciary Committee report in 1854 in our federal government said, quote, "In this age there can be no substitute for Christianity, that in its general principles is the great conservative element on which we must rely for the purity and permanence of free institutions. Our nation was founded, as you know, with basic rights. Among those are the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion. This bill, SB2, will directly impact those freedoms, will directly cause the courts to say it is not okay to express a Christian worldview. Let me give you some, there's been several people said there's been no examples, no cases of where this has been a problem. Let me give you a few. Christian worker at Hewlett-Packard was fired for posting Bible verses on his cubicle. Why? Because of sexual orientation legislation in that state. Eastman Kodak of Rochester, New York, fired an individual because he would not sign a statement by that company that he was a Christian. He did not discriminate against homosexuals, but the policy was that you had to value homosexuality. When he wouldn't sign that, he was fired. What did they use? Sexual orientation legislation, exactly what you are about to pass here with SB2. Let me give you another one. States that have these sexual orientation ones have public schools that require pro-homosexual education, and that's an end. If a student says that they feel that homosexuality is a sin, they can be given pro-homosexual re-education. Another example, in California, with sexual orientation legislation, a lesbian couple came to two Christian doctors and said, "We want to be inseminated and have a child." The doctors were Christian and said, "You know, that goes against our moral view. Why don't you go to a secular doctor and do that? That would be just fine." The lesbian said, "No, sexual orientation legislation." They sued the doctors, and they won. And what you are doing with Senate Bill 2 is you are criminalizing the Christian worldview that simply wants to state, not in hatred as been said, simply wants to state that it's okay to believe that a certain lifestyle choice is amoral, and we should be able to express that. And what you are doing is causing that criminalization.
Thank you.
Any
Your
questions?
No, I have no questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Adam. My son's name is Adam. It's a very fine name. I will hear now from Kathy Eaton and Akasha Vitelli. And then after that, we'll have opponents again, Nina Ray and Dale McNeil and Steve Perry. We've got people spread out around the building. And I'd like the McSweens, there's three McSweens that will be testifying, so if you'll queue up for the proponents after we've heard from the opponent. No, right now I want Akasha Vitelli and Kathy Eaton.
Hi.
State your name, please. You have 2 minutes.
Okay.
Welcome.
Hello again. My name's Akasha Vitelli. Thank you, Chair Walker, and the committee for having me here.
I'm Akasha Vitelli, and I live in Eugene, Oregon, in Senate District 4. I am a University of Oregon student in the Family and Human Services Program and an intern at Community Alliance of Lane County, which works in social justice and civil rights causes. I am a person who has been verbally and emotionally harassed as well as assaulted for my sexual orientation. Senate Bill 2 is an important bill. I am sad to say that discrimination is alive and well today in Oregon. In 2003, while taking my partner's children to a grocery store, a bunch of people in a car decided to yell homophobic insults at me. And the children at the time were 12 and 14, and they were very shaken by this incident. How do you explain to your children about discrimination? And how do you explain to your children that the United States of America sees your family as less than human, to not have basic rights that every human being, every American citizen should have? Basic rights. Refusal to seek treatment at a doctor facility based on your religion. Why did you go into being a doctor? To help people? You know, not everybody has a special profession that they can do. If you have a special profession that could help other people, you've gone into that to help them, not to judge them because you don't believe that they're a human being or how they choose to live their life, which is our freedom here in the United States to have. And I'm here today to urge that another person doesn't have to die because someone chooses not to help them based on their own personal moral belief to let someone die. So I urge you to please pass Senate Bill 2.
Thank you, Ms. Vitelli. I'm sorry you've had those experiences here in the state of Oregon in the year 2007.
Thank you.
All right, we will hear from this last call from Mike Schulberg. Okay, Nina Ray, Dale McNeil, and Steve Perry. All three of you at once. And then after that, please queue up Teresa, Jennifer, and Ree McSween. You'll be coming next. Thank you. Just start in. Tell us your name, and we'll start your 2 minutes.
Okay. My name is Nina Ray. I'm here as a private citizen. Thank you for inviting me to speak today. The fact of the matter is that the large majority, according to the Justice Department, of students who are discriminated against are Christians. Why is it that 2,000 schools in America have the day of silence? I want to read to you about Canada. First of all, I'm against this bill. I'm here to express my concern about those places of employment in the community which would object to hiring openly homosexual persons based upon deeply held religious convictions. Senators, I want to call your attention to Canada's Human Rights Commission. There is one in each Canadian province. It violates freedom of speech. For example, a Catholic bishop, Bishop Fred Henry, expressed his opinion of same-sex marriage in a letter which was given to his parishioners. A complaint was filed against him, and he had to go before a tribunal. Bishop Henry responded, "My rights to freedom of religion and freedom of free speech have been violated." So Christians will be fired. A Canadian priest has written a piece called "Thinly Disguised Totalitarianism." A printing business was fined $5,000 by the Ontario Human Rights Commission for refusing to print letterhead and cards for the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Archives. The business owner protested that his Christian faith prevented him from promoting homosexuality. In an Ontario lower court ordered a Catholic high school to admit a male student and his boyfriend to the school prom, forcing it on that school.
Okay, you're out of time.
Fine.
Thank you.
My name is Dale McNeil. I'm from Tigard, Oregon. I'm here as an individual. I speak in opposition to the Senate Bill 2. The United States was founded on Judeo-Christian principles outlined in our Bible. In the last 50 years, the federal and state governments have eroded or reversed many moral laws. We have thrown God out of our schools and much of our government. We see the chaos we're in here, even here tonight. Most of our schools today cannot teach principles in the Bible, but they do promote a religion. It's a religion of humanism. We haven't been mentioning humanism tonight, so it's the first time. It is a religion as defined by the Supreme Court of the United States. It's a secular religion. The doctrines of humanism have been set forth in manifestos, the human manifestos, and in 1933 and 73. Religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created, and the whole idea that we're seeing, and John Dewey is the father of progressive education, is a big proponent of that and wrote most of the articles in the human manifesto. And there's been a mounting campaign since then, since the 30s and 40s, to remove all traces of Christianity from our public schools and institutions in our land, and we still see it now. They're introducing courses and textbooks which openly teach the religious tenets of humanism, which is diametrically opposed to principal values of Christianity. Understand that humanism is teaching today, even here in Oregon, the promotion of abortion, sexual freedom of outright, which you're promoting here now, wanting to, by this law. And I love people, but I don't want to have them force me to take on their lifestyle. That is absolutely abhorrent to me. Some say you can't legislate morality, but what Senate Bill does is legislate immorality in our state and is doing it by state law. American law was established on moral principles of the Bible. The law has opened the door to further immorality. This law will open the door more for immorality in our state and our nation.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for the time tonight.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Perry. I thank you for having me up here and able to talk. I'm just a normal citizen. I'm not a lawyer. I don't have a lot of fancy legal terms for you all, but I do want to let you know I live in the state of Oregon for over 50 years. I've raised my family here. I have three daughters. I'm a believing Christian. We live in a democracy. Unfortunately, in a democracy, nothing's 100% perfect. Only with Jesus Christ we will enjoy perfection. What I ask here is for you to take a look at something that we haven't taken a look with, and it doesn't really concern anyone here in this room in particular. It concerns our children. How do we protect our children with this type of law? SB2 is filled like holes like the Swiss cheese. There's nothing to take a sexual predator dressing up as a transsexual and walking into a public restroom. Under this law, he's able to. I have a 12-year-old daughter. This is criminal to me. We need protection for our children. We're the adults, we're the parents, we're the guiding principles in their lives. Without such, they don't have any rules. They don't have any guidance. We're not trying to discriminate against anyone. Christians don't discriminate against homosexuality. I love everyone equally. I teach my children the same. We don't embrace their lifestyle. That's it. I'm not asking them to embrace mine either. All I'm asking is that the majority of the Oregonians have before voted on gay rights amendments such as marriage. The Supreme Court has struck it down. And ladies and gentlemen, I can guarantee you if this bill was brought forth, the majority of the Oregonians would vote it down. Not to be discriminatory, it is a bill full of loopholes and laws that don't protect the majority. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Thank all of you. All right, I'll hear from the McSweens. There's three of you, Teresa, Jennifer, and Ree. And then when we go to the opponents after that, we go to the children from Weed. All of the young people from Weed will be up as the next set of proponents. All right, start in. State your name, please. You know the drill. You've got 2 minutes.
That doesn't mean
you don't have quality of time.
Thank you. My name is Teresa McSween, and actually I wanted to thank you for encouraging the Lead Children because that's the group that I'm here with, too.
Oh, great.
I am from Eugene, Senate District 7. Thank you for your time here today. In the 1930s and 40s, the Ku Klux Klan gained power by banding together against blacks. They voted as a group, and all their efforts were fueled by hatred and intimidation. They were able to vote in 12 governors. They voted in state senators and congresspeople. They influenced laws against the blacks, like the Jim Crow laws. These laws truly affected the lives of blacks, and the legislation that created equality and protection for blacks was sorely needed indeed. Now black people at least have the legal ground to defend themselves against such concerted efforts. In the 21st century, those people in the Oregon Family Council and the religious zealots who believe and follow their words and actions are driving legislation in much the same way. They are using a group of people to gain power and turn the laws of our country to their own use. They want to turn our freedoms into religious oppression. They want to replace the Bill of Rights with biblical law. So what happens to non-Christians? Who gets legislated against next? If you set a precedence of striking down freedom, then the next group they go after may include your children or theirs, or maybe even their own children. It is dangerous to us all to legislate hate. When I read this bill and looked at the list of who needs to be included to protect them from hate legislation and activities, I wondered what group would be before you fighting next. As the Senate of Oregon, I hold you responsible for legislating freedom, and by so doing, you are legislating freedom for generations to come.
Thank you, Ms. McSween. And you must be the next Ms. McSween.
Yeah. My name is Jennifer McSween, and I live in Eugene in Lane County. I came here to speak today about having lesbian parents. And I don't know what to say because they're just my parents. Rhee came to live with us when I was 2, and so I don't know life without her. They've just been parents doing everything that parents should do, like teaching me to drive and just getting me prepared for the world, just like everyone else. I love them, and they're my moms. I think they're really good moms. They love and protect me and support me in so many different ways. The only negativity that I experience from having lesbian parents is from the outside world. For example, from my former school and former teachers at South Eugene High School. Like, I didn't want both of them to come to the school to help me because of the teachers and administrators would turn against me just because my parents are lesbians. I had to be careful of my friends because so many times when people found out that my parents were lesbians, they shunned me or ridiculed me or my parents. I find that when people don't understand my parental situation, they treat me differently, not because of what I have done or who I am, but just because of who my parents are. And this is wrong. My parents and I should be able to have the same protection. As it stands, I have more protection when I come of age than my parents have right now, just because they are the same gender. So I'm asking you to support Senate Bill Number 2 so that my parents can have the same protection as everyone else. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Rhee McSween. I live in District 7 in Eugene, Oregon. I was invited here today by Madge Rafferty, the Executive Director of LEAD. I was raised in the Deep South during the height of racial turmoil and discrimination. When I was in junior high school, the black students held a walkout because of the frustration of being treated as second-class citizens. I remember being very angry at them until one of my teachers said to me, "They have rights too, and that they are people too." When I heard that statement changed my perspective on race. I realized that it was wrong to hate someone based on the color of their skin. Many people in my school, in my family, in my community, said that racial anti-discrimination laws would undermine moral family values and chaos would reign throughout the South. Yet what really happened over time was that it forced people to face their own racism and to change their attitude. As our leaders, you have the responsibility to lead people away from hate and fear and towards acceptance. In the Tennessee legislature, there was a man named Henry Byrne who had voted against suffrage for women in the United States. Whether or not the vote happened in the rest of the country depended on what happened in Tennessee. The night before the crucial vote in Tennessee, Henry Byrne received a letter from his mother which said, "Vote for suffrage. Don't keep them in doubt." Henry Byrne changed his vote the next day to the surprise of everyone and voted for women's right to vote. His one vote made the difference. Tennessee's approval passed women's suffrage in the United States. It is now your turn to be brave. It is to have courage to end discrimination against sexual orientation and to protect Oregonian citizens from hate. follow in the footsteps of these brave state legislatures who passed laws to end racial discrimination and to give women the right to vote. Protect me, my family, and my community by sending this bill to the floor for a vote and prevent discrimination based on sexual orientation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for making the trip to Eugene. All right, we'll hear from opponents now. Chris Holgan, I think I have that correct, Norma Rich, and Jeff Favel. And then if the lead kids will be on tap, you'll be up next. Okay, just whoever's seated first, start, please.
Great. Senator Walker, thank you. My name's Chris Holgain. I'm from West Lynn, and I oppose Senate Bill 2. This is really a slippery slope that we're headed to. If you grant special rights to a group of people who've chosen a unique lifestyle, then it opens the door for other groups who perceive themselves as having or being different. I've heard a lot about fairness tonight. Senate Bill 2 is not about fairness. We've listened to information tonight in terms of how its far-reaching effects could affect churches and organizations, people of faith, as well as school curriculums that can affect our children. That's a great concern. Clearly, the majority of Americans would be negatively affected if this bill were to go through in the state of Oregon. The consequences, we reap what we sow, and certainly it would affect Oregonians. In closing, I do not hate gays, lesbians, transgenders. Rather, I do not agree with their lifestyle because I believe it's harmful and it has implications that negatively affects our society. The people of our great state of Oregon have voted on similar measures in the past. Each one has been defeated. Listen to the will of the people and do the right thing by rejecting Senate Bill 2. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan. Sir?
Hello, Madam Chair and Senators.
The microphone's movable, yes, okay. You can pull it your way.
Madam Chair and Senators, I would like to speak just a little bit.
What is your name, please?
I'm sorry. I'm Jeff Fagel. I'm coming on my own behalf. I'd like to speak just a little bit to our national philosophy of government, because that's kind of where it starts. I think that many people here and many people who support this bill look to the Declaration of Independence, where it talks about the unalienable rights to life, liberty, and happiness. And but that same paragraph and the same Declaration of Independence, which is our first legal document, says that these rights are from the Creator, which is, and it also says that these rights are from, it is according to the laws of nature, and nature is God. That phrase, law of nature, and nature is God, comes from William Blackstone, comes from Baron von Charles Montesto. It's a philosophy of government. It's based on not unchanging principles of law. And those principles of law based in the law of nature, and nature is God. In summary, I guess, it's not wrong to establish those laws. George Washington and many of the other founding fathers said that religion and morality are inseparable, and they're unreplaceable supports to our government. The government cannot exist without them. Our government was...
Thank you, out of time.
Oh,
that's your signal.
Thank you.
Okay, we have actually on our next panel.
No one
wants. She hasn't spoken. I apologize. You know, I should have let Senator Walker just finish this panel. My apologies. Okay, you go ahead.
Okay. My name's Norma Ridge, and I'm here on behalf of Concerned Women for America of Oregon. And actually, we have 6 points, so it's hard to have disagreement. So it's hard to pin which one is. Well, I think we'll go with the gender expression and perceived orientation. And I think you would, if you turn to page 3 of the testimony, you will be appalled at what's included under sexual orientation and gender identities. I won't even read them, you know, the ones that are most appalling, because it would be embarrassing. That's one point. And another point is that there's nothing, no research, scientific, sociological, or psychological, that supports the claim that homosexuality is genetic. And I have attached some things on that basis, too. What else to say on that? I could quote one of the authors of the hypothalamus study. It's important to stress what I didn't find. I did not prove that homosexuality is genetic or find a genetic cause for being gay. I did not show that men are born that way, the most common mistake people make in their interpretation of my work, nor did I locate a gay center in the brain. And that's by Dr. Simon LeVay. In other words, it does not satisfy the court's standard, a historical standard for the term
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I didn't want to start anything else.
I think you get a prize for staying under. Thank you very much.
It's there, and if you start one thing, you got to finish it.
That's true. Thank you. Okay, we have three students and a student leader from the same organization, Jessica Spalding, Tara Williams, Will Ross, and Madge Rafferty.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somebody could find a chair.
Madge, are you coming up? We'll get an extra chair for you.
Welcome.
How are you today?
We're good, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and member of the committee. Hello, my name is Jessica Spalding, and I go to Lemon High School. I'm here to ask you to support Senate Bill 2. I've seen friends picked on and harassed because she is a lesbian. This isn't right, and it needs to be changed. I learned about empowerment at LEAD. LEAD is my teen group in Eugene. The mission of LEAD is to develop the leadership skills of low-income teens, multicultural, and at risk. Teens to empower them to address community problems and change the world. This isn't why I'm here today. That's why I'm here today, to help change the world for the better. It matters to me. It matters to teens what you do here in Salem. Do the right thing. Pass the bill, Senate Bill 2. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next.
Good evening. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Council. My name is Tara Williams, and I am from Eugene, Senate District 4. I'm a student at Lane Community College, as well as a volunteer at LEAD, and one of the co-creators of the Nuestro Lugar, Our Place Teen Center that LEAD has recently spearheaded and created. Coming out of the closet is a frightening experience that many of us cannot truly understand until it actually happens. We are faced with being rejected by family, outcasted by friends, harassed in school, and struggling to function in a workplace that is unaccepting. I have known members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community who have dealt with irrational hate, kicked out of their homes, beaten by classmates, told that they are disgusting and wrong, and treated inhumanely, driving them to take their own life. No human being deserves this. As a queer woman, I have been told that I am a sinner, an abomination, and that I don't deserve life. But I know better. I'm a diligent worker, a loyal friend, an honest daughter who works to create positive impact. I am also lucky to have a family who loves me, friends that support me, and a job wherein my identity is celebrated and honored. Today, I am the voice for those who are afraid, asking that the Oregon Equality Act be passed. No, not asking, urging. We are no less of a human being just because our heart is open to our own gender, to all genders, and to people that don't identify with the physical body that was given to them. There is no gay disease. We are not sick. There does not exist a gay agenda. It is not a chosen, quote-unquote, lifestyle. I am here to ask that the Senate Bill 2 be passed, giving equal protection and community support that all human beings deserve a chance to live their lives without fear of living them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Council. My name is Will Ross, and I'm from Senate District 11. I'll come right out and say it. I'm bisexual. I see and experience all kinds of physical, verbal abuse on a daily basis. And it's sickening. People saying that I suck, people calling me fag, all kinds of stuff. I mean, I walk around and I see abuse in my friends, in my friends' jarred and hurt eyes. It hurts me. I cannot stand to see my friends and my friends' friends even hurt, let alone my family. And that's why I'm here, because I consider LGBTQ youth and adults as my family, as people who are experiencing this kind of abuse on a daily basis. And I'm here to talk to you about stopping that. This bill will help to end this. In fact, I'm confident it will end this. This bill will also be an amazing help and a very, very good influence on our children. This will be an amazing influence on our children. My generation, the next generation, the generations after this, they will not have to live with abuse and with having to even see their friends being abused, like Jessica, or themselves being abused if they're not physically happy with the body that they're given. I'd also like to point out that it's nice to notice that we're the only three youth here talking today. And we care. I am urging you to pass this bill. Please, for the sake of me, my family, my friends, my community, and all our children. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Madge Rafferty. I live in Eugene. The passage of this bill is very important to me. I am the founder and executive director of the LEAD program, a nonprofit youth program for teens. I believe you've heard some of my teen colleagues speak before me. I'm here to reiterate that this bill is not only good for young people, it is necessary to protect them from the discrimination they experience on a daily basis in schools. I'm a 20-year worker in the field of youth education, both as a teacher, a counselor, and now a nonprofit director. I've also raised a 20-year-old son. I've worked with hundreds of teens and families. I've lived in Eugene for 16 years. And it's this climate in Oregon, this climate of discrimination and oppression that hurts young people, keeps them small and afraid, makes them hate themselves, and isolates them from love and support. In earlier testimony, Nick Graham said, "Everyone should be free to live the life they want to live." I absolutely agree. This has been denied to me. In 16 years I've lived in Eugene, based on my perceived or actual sexual orientation, I have been threatened with firing from my job. I've had my house shot out at night. I've been called disgusting names by people after a rally and physically assaulted. I've received death threats, and I have, when I reported this to the police, they said they couldn't take a report as a hate crime. This anecdotal testimony that I offer you, according to earlier testimony, is somehow invalid because it is anecdotal. My experience listed above are direct reflection of the environment of fear and confusion that has existed and perpetuated in this state. I wish I could say that my experiences were unique or unusual, but they are not. Gays, lesbians, bisexual, and transgendered people have long been scapegoated by our culture. It's past time for this legislation to be passed. You've heard from lead teens, the future of Oregon. They understand what justice is. When I explained to some teens back in Eugene why we were coming here, one of them said, "You mean that's not a law yet?"
You're out of time, unfortunately.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving the young people an opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we'll take Louise Carpenter, Dan Guile, and Ruth Pike. And after those, we'll have Esther Griffin, Wade Willis, and Kento Azagami. Welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chairman, committee members. Thank you for having us and allowing us to speak. My name is Ruth Pike, and the reason I am here today, it does dishearten me and hurt my heart that there are people out there that are unkind to gay people, but we cannot give them special rights under the law. Let me read you my quick statement. Homosexuals are already protected under the law. Please do not give homosexuals special rights or minority status. Senate Bill 2 goes against every major religious teaching in the world. SB 2 contains inadequate religious protection and allows judges to define the primary purpose of a church. This would have disastrous and broad-reaching effects on churches of all faiths, all over Oregon, including Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Mormonism, Buddhism, and Hinduism. SB 2 offers a broad definition of sexual orientation and gender identity. SB 2 would require that public facilities such as restrooms and locker rooms or other gender-specific facilities allow access to transgendered individuals or face legal action. Homosexuals make up a disproportionate amount of child sexual offenders. Studies indicate that about 35% of pedophiles are homosexuals. While it is true that this represents a minority in comparison to heterosexual offenders, the significance lies in the fact that male homosexuals make up only about 2% of the general population. Therefore, the 35% figure reveals that a child molester is 17 times more likely to be a homosexual. Setting the record straight, what research really says about the consequences of homosexuality, written by Dr. Larry Butterf, page 64. We must not give special rights to homosexuals in locker rooms or public restrooms for this reason. SB 2 requires more diversity education, even if children have a differing religious worldview.
You're out of time, I'm afraid.
Thank you.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Guile. I live in Salem, Oregon. Thank you for having me here. I'd like to say first off that I've had three roommates who are homosexual and a close relative. Of those, only one of them is still a practicing homosexual. And the case of innateness seems to contradict experience. It's true that kids suffer persecution, which is very unfortunate, and adults as well, but that's not limited to homosexuals. I wasn't a homosexual, but yet I experienced persecution in high school. And it's still going on. The laws regarding discrimination against blacks or race in general hasn't stopped persecution among blacks, Mexicans, or other groups that are already protected by law. And seeking that this law will relieve that is unrealistic when looking at society as a whole. In terms of the granting this essentially minority status to homosexuals, not just homosexuals, but the sexual orientation group. doesn't fit with the unchangeable characteristic or political powerlessness as evident here in this courtroom and by SB2 itself. Therefore, I think that this bill should not be passed.
I am Lois Carpenter, presently residing in Turner, and I'm a fifth-generation Oregonian. Not many people can say that, and I love Oregon very much. And I attended college here, and I'm just going to read just the introduction and the conclusion, because you've been better speakers than I, and have presented a lot of good facts. But I did want to say Senate Bill 2 is a very dangerous bill. It contains inadequate protection of the rights of Christian and the church. Can you imagine it allows judges to define the prime purpose of a church? Most churches have the Word of God to do that. What are you thinking of, some liberal judge, like the one out of San Francisco? I am going to just rebuttal a couple of little things that were said. I am very sorry for the young people if they feel persecuted, but I've seen children that aren't homosexuals be persecuted. I taught in Oregon for 28 years. I've been in the classroom, and one of my goals was always to protect children and to have a happy schoolroom, and I think I was quite successful. But today, all the material I read, I would say Christian children are persecuted more than anybody. The Bible isn't allowed. Prayer isn't allowed. They aren't allowed to talk of their beliefs. And I hadn't even realized, because maybe I'm not in the right community, to even realize that the persecution was bad for homosexuals. But I suppose it is if they talk about it, just like a Christian is going to be persecuted if he talks about it. And I don't think you can legislate morality. You have to change people's hearts, and then you might have some success in that. Children are like chickens, and they will peck away until they have killed. I think the voting in our last election showed that the majority of Oregonians don't want anything like Senate Bill 2. Behaviors should not be granted by civil rights status. It is an entirely different thing when you make your own choice. This bill is too extreme and violates the moral values held by most people across the state of Oregon. It will lead to even greater restrictions on our spatial rights and religious liberty. It would be well for you all, I'm talking to my senators, to know what you are doing. Only by studying the past can you know how to handle the present and the future. And I hope you know what I am talking about.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Walker.
I can't let Ms. Pike leave the podium without responding. I'm sorry, but I don't know where you get your facts that a child molester is 17 times more likely to be a homosexual. It's my turn to speak. I was raped and or sexually abused by 7 different men from the time I was 5 years old, ma'am, and not one of them was a homosexual. They were all heterosexuals. That is the most outlandish thing I've heard here said today. And that's my piece tonight. I had to get it out and tell you that I just can't believe that you would make a statement like that.
It's not me making the statement. It's research, and the research has been documented.
Okay, that's all enough. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll now have Esther Griffin, Wade Willis, whoever I said next, Kento Azagami. I'll give it to the administrator. Welcome.
Madam Chair, Senators, good evening. My name is Esther Griffin. My husband, 2 sons, and I live in Beaverton, where I was employed at Southridge High School. Part of my job was making sure seniors complete 60 hours of community service to graduate. One bright and personable senior hadn't recorded any hours in 4 years. One day she called me into the hall, away from my coworker, and said she'd been afraid to turn in her hours. She volunteered with Bridge 13, an educational group of GLBT students. I praised her good work and said, as proof of your hours, just get a letter from Molly, the program's coordinator. She looked at me with such incredible relief and said, you know Molly? This wonderful student had been afraid for so long to give her hours to my coworker, feeling that who she was and the service she was providing to her community was unacceptable to others. I began attending Gay Straight Alliance meetings and helped with events like No Name Calling Week. I helped get GSA t-shirts approved, printed, and sold to students and staff. But when a parent complained to the principal that her son could not learn in an environment in which a teacher was wearing such a shirt, he was excused from any class where a teacher wore the shirt. Kids learned I was a safe, accepting person and dropped by just to touch base. But my coworker told the vice principal it bothered her to have gay students in our office, so I could not talk to them during the day. I could not put respect posters in the halls, as administration deemed them controversial. The principal didn't want me to post a flyer about Bridge 13 as a volunteer opportunity because it was dangerous. I was constantly held back in trying to make our school a welcoming environment for all students. And though my job performance was impeccable, I was let go last June, under the pretense of restructuring. But last fall, someone was hired in my place. I contacted my union president, and a month later he told me, I talked to all concerned parties, and the bottom line is you are not a good fit for the school. I lost my job because of the homophobia and discrimination allowed in our state's educational system. Not only do I lose, but worse, our students lose, both now and in the future. Please pass Senate Bill 2. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for hearing me. My name is Wade Willis. Up until last year, I was the theater arts director at Southridge High School in Beaverton, and I had chosen one of the most educational pieces of theater I had ever read as part of the season, The Laramie Project, about a community's reaction to the brutal hate crimes of Matthew Shepard. The principal chose to cancel the play because she felt the play was controversial due to the subject of sexual orientation. As the controversy unfolded, I watched the Gay and Straight Alliance Club meet in secrecy for fear of repercussions. I watched as pride and tolerance posters were forcibly taken down from classrooms by the administration while classes were in session. I watched the administration as they told one gay student that the survey he was administering as part of an assignment for the statistics class was not to be continued, and that none of the data he had collected so far could be shared with anyone. I watched colleagues and students have all of their incredibly wonderful and complex characteristics reduced down to one label, homosexual, and thereby become disenfranchised by the very school system whose purpose it is to produce compassionate, contributing members of our society, who now teach not only how to discriminate, but who to discriminate against. Fortunately, the kinds of hate crimes that Matthew Shepard suffered are not a daily occurrence. The hate crimes that I have witnessed that are a daily occurrence are those that amputate the human spirit, are those that make many wonderfully gifted, talented, loving, compassionate people hear language that makes them feel that they are merely tolerated in our society rather than celebrated. In January of this year, I received the Individual Diversity Award from the Human Rights Advisory Commission in the city of Beaverton for my persistence in trying to have the Laramie Project produced. While I was honored, receiving this award reminded me how much I wished I lived in a society where fighting for education and diversity wouldn't attract the kind of attention that would warrant an award such as this. It is sad to me that I live in a state where the government has to protect minority groups against the perspective of those who were taught that just because one of your many traits is this particular one, that you are less human and therefore deserve less protection than those without that label. Without this protective law, we continue to empower the kind of bigotry that in 2007 we should be well beyond. When I was growing up in Eugene, I remember Oregon being in the front runner regarding many political, social, and environmental issues. Our state took pride in leading the way for other states to follow. Why are we so behind on this particular issue? Thank you.
Thank you. And I knew your dad. I worked with your dad. And
bless you. Thank you very much.
He would be proud of you today. Thank you.
I have a little blurb at the top about him. Read
Madam
it.
Chair, and I also want to tell you that I knew your father very well.
Thank you.
Enjoyed going in for my interviews, and then when he retired, we met at Xenon to have lunch, and a truly wonderful man.
Spoke Thank you.
Many wonderful things about your mother, and I'm honored to meet you as well.
Thank you. Honored to meet you all, too.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kento Wazagami, and I am from Tigard. I am a freshman at Portland State University majoring in theater arts, and I am the president of the College Democrats of Portland State University, the local chapter of the Oregon Federation of College Democrats. My testimony and our written testimony, College Democrats declare the time is now for Senate Bill 2, reflects only the opinions of our group and not of any other organization. I want to keep my testimony very positive, so I want to tell you why non-discrimination legislation works. And I know it works because I work. I currently work at Target at the Washington Square location in Tigard. And Target has a very broad non-discrimination policy. We define diversity as individuality, whatever makes you unique. It could be your gender, your national origin, your sexual orientation, your income status, and regardless, my employer welcomes me and makes me feel comfortable and asks me to use my characteristics to help drive sales and help build the best company ever. So I was hired initially as a cashier, and after talking with my supervisors, they found an incredibly good fit for me, and I am now the store operator, a position that for pretty much everyone's recent memory has been held exclusively by women. My friends also work in departments that don't exactly mesh with what you would expect. The supervisor for the sporting goods department is a Chinese immigrant woman, and one of my good friends, a gay man, used to work in the health and beauty department. As you can see, non-discrimination legislation doesn't force anyone to do anything. It allows everyone to be able to give their best to their employer. It allows everyone to be able to simply be who they are and contributes to our economy. It's one of the major reasons that I continue to work at Target. It's reasons like this that the College Democrats really value non-discrimination legislation. We come from a great cross-section of Oregon, from Astoria to Wasco. We have a variety of religious beliefs, including Buddhism and Roman Catholicism, even a big amount of majors, like from biology to theater arts. And yet we unanimously endorse the support of Senate Bill 2 at our meeting on Thursday, March 7th.
Thank you very much.
And really quickly, we also wanted to leave you a gift, just so that you know the time is now to pass on a bill too.
Thank you very much. Okay. We have Craig Myers, Mike Schrock, and Marie Barzin. Thank you. And up next for the proponents will be the Reverend Ron LaRocque, the Reverend Wes Mullins, and Laura Calvo. Is Gloria Holland? She is like. Welcome. Go ahead and get started.
Good evening, Senators. My name is Craig Myers. I'm a citizen of Marion County. I'm here on my own behalf tonight. I'd like to zero in on Section 2, Paragraph 1 for just a moment. To quote that passage, this is Section 1, a program of public education calculated to eliminate attitudes, etc. What we've been listening to tonight are allegations about people who differ from the homosexual viewpoint, and there's a presumption that that's driven by hate and fear. I've been branded indirectly by the media as a homophobic because I don't support homosexuality, though I have homosexual friends and relatives. There's no evidence out there. that I've demonstrated or anyone I know that illustrates hate or fear towards these people, but instead it's our moral convictions that cause us to have a differing attitude. Now, the state apparently feels that it's their responsibility somehow to change attitudes, especially in our school system. Who is ultimately responsible for the morality and attitudes of Oregon's children? Is it the state? Or is it those children's parents?
Thank you.
Aren't over 99% of the offspring of this state the offspring of heterosexual parents? And don't those parents have the right to communicate their values to those children to the effect that they feel that a heterosexual home is a healthier home? Even without abundant scientific evidence to the contrary, the historical evidence is overwhelming.
Okay, thank you. You're out of time. And we will move to... Are you Marie?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
welcome
mm-hmm.
to the committee.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm speaking tonight as a private citizen.
Can you identify yourself for the record?
My name is Marie Berzin, and I live in Beaverton, Oregon. I'm here this evening as a private citizen, a mother, and a religious education instructor for over 7 years. I'm testifying today to add perspective to this debate. I find several points in Senate Bill 2 troubling. My opinions are as follows. Senate Bill 2 would require Oregon schools to teach on the subject of gay and lesbian sexuality. The broad language of SB 2 would open the door to sweeping statewide changes. In a way, individual school districts choose to address the topics of homosexuality, bisexuality, and transgender in the classroom. Insufficient religious exemption. SB 2 does not contain a sufficient religious exemption to fully protect a church or religious institutions from having to hire a gay, lesbian, or bisexual, or transgender individuals. For jobs, leaving a court to decide what is or is not closely connected with the primary purpose of the church. Parents such as myself will face choices of over how or if to expose their children to these subjects in public school. Catholic schools will be asked to use texts that are designed to corrupt the most innocent young minds. Pastors and religious instructors may be prohibited from preaching against homosexuality from the pulpit or in catechetical classes. In Sweden and Canada, pastors have already been censored and fined for doing just that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll take the Reverend Ron LaRocque, Reverend Wes Mullins, and Laura Calvo. And the next opponent's testimony will be from Alberto Gillen, Sergey Ivanitsky, and Don Rappel. And please forgive my mispronunciation if I did. That's one of the reasons we have you identify yourselves for the record. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ron LaRocque, and it is my privilege to pastor and represent before you this evening the Metropolitan Community Church of Portland. Our church has an average Sunday attendance of 225 people and an estimated 500 people who consider us their church home. The congregation is comprised solely of gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered members, their families, friends, and allies. While it is a joy for me to see 225 gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people come together every Sunday to worship, the number of people present under that one roof who have been victims of discrimination pains me deeply. One need not look far to find many people who have lost their possessions, their jobs, their families, and their dignity because others felt free to discriminate against them based only on their sexual orientation or gender identity. While there are many reasons that people become part of MCC Portland, one of the most common recurring themes I hear from for people's involvement in our congregation is that we offer a place where they can be fully who God created them to be. I pray this safe space will be extended to more places in our state. As you have heard tonight, although some will claim to speak on behalf of all Christians, the religious voice is far from univocal on the subject of what are appropriate laws concerning sexual and gender minorities. On both sides of the debate are people of strong religious conviction who speak from their hearts. But I ask you, the members of this committee, to recognize that the conservative religious voice in this discussion is not the only voice, and that to privilege one religious understanding at the expense of all others would be inappropriate. I also wish to state that as a religious professional, I believe that the religious exemptions provided for in this bill appropriately allow for the free exercise of religion without allowing any one person's faith to be imposed on another.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Hi, Madam Chairperson, the members of the committee. My name is Reverend Wes Mullins, and I am here tonight not only as a member of the clergy, a resident of Northeast Portland, but also as primarily as the board of directors member of the Community of Welcoming Congregations, or the CWC. That group is a group that comprises 81 congregations throughout the state, from urban to rural, from predominantly Republican areas to predominantly Democratic districts. We represent Christians, Jews, Buddhists, and other faith groups from all those communities. We are from Portland, Eugene, Corvallis, and here in Salem. We're also from the more rural areas of Ashland, Bend, Pendleton, and Klamath Falls. Notice today that the followers of God, the people of faith from all throughout the districts of this state, are ready to see the end of discrimination. It was Jesus who said that the two greatest commands are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. As a representative for these thousands of Christians that I represent as a part of our organization, I say to you, please end this injustice. Give us equality. Give us fairness. Give us what every fair-minded person of goodwill can recognize as moral obligation, the obligation to show love to our neighbors through giving them the fair and equal treatment that all humans should enjoy. I also want to say that I have no concern as a religious professional about the religious exemption in this policy. I feel that it rightly protects religious institutions. I am also curious as to what large group of homosexuals is so beating down the doors of these conservative religious groups that are so threatened by the thought that we would want to work there and force them to let us. I personally have no desire to be a part of their organization or to see their organization succeed through my hard work as a part of them. It's also a terrible thing when we come to the idea that perhaps women or African Americans or other minority groups could be refused the right to participate equally, yet the church seems to be the groups that are often the slowest to see that as true. Unfortunately, it seems that the church is often behind the bar when it comes to these issues, and I urge you to please continue to lead us in ways that sometimes the church fails to do.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening. My name is Laura Calvo. I live in Portland, Oregon. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of Senate Bill 2. You have copies of my full written testimony. With a 2 to 3 minute time frame to testify, I can only tell you that I simply cannot even begin to describe the devastating effects that unjust discrimination has personally cost me, nor the cost to every citizen of this state. Fortunately, you have the opposition's testimony as clear evidence as to why Senate Bill 2 is clearly needed in this state. In the simplest terms and as a gross understatement, it's time to end unjust discrimination in this state. Socially, politically, and economically, it's the right thing to do and has long been overdue. This is the third time that I have come to Salem to testify before a Senate committee in support of legislation to ban unfair discrimination. It's time for public policy to recognize the insidious harm caused to thousands of citizens and their families. Public policy can no longer be silent when it comes to the right of every citizen to be free from discrimination in housing, education, employment, and public accommodation based solely upon their intrinsic sexual orientation. The basic premise of equal rights for all citizens under the law has long been longstanding subject for the society. In the early 1700s, French lawyer and philosopher Charles de Montesquieu said, "In the state of nature, all men are born equal, but they cannot continue in this equality. Society makes them lose it, and they recover it only by the protection of the law." In 1787, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "I consider all the ill as established which may be established. I have a right to nothing which another has a right to take away. I urge you by please sending Senate Bill 2 to the floor of the Senate as soon as possible." Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Reverend Mullins, because I just wanted to point out this one piece of your testimony.
Yes.
We heard earlier from someone that he quoted George Washington saying, religion and morality go hand in hand, or something like that. And I was thinking in my head, what do you mean by that? Because it's sort of saying that to be a moral person, you have to be a religious person. But I don't think that's true at all. They don't go hand in hand. I mean, one can complement the other. But your point was that you said, please lead us in the ways the church sometimes fails to do. That is exactly what we're doing here, is because there is a separation of church and state. We legislate and pass laws in this faith that we live by, but other people see a God or whomever they see as their great spirit as their leader in society. But your point here, Reverend, that I just really like, is give us what every fair-minded person of goodwill can recognize as a moral obligation. Not a religious person, but every fair-minded person. The obligation to show love to our neighbors through giving them the fair and equal treatment that all humans should enjoy. And that's what you're all here to tell us about today.
Yes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Alberto Gillen, Sergey Ivanitsky, and Don Ropel. And then the next proponents will be Frank Dixon, Daryl Mock, and Anthony Britton.
My name is Serge Ivanitsky. Good evening. I've been up since 3 a.m. because of my work, and so I don't have anything prepared. However, I would like to say that homosexuality is universal, it's timeless, and it'll be with us for a long time. I immigrated to this country at 14 years old with an elderly widowed mother. I know what it's like to be violated by pedophiles on two continents. I've lived on four, and the reaction to homosexuality is the same on all those continents. I am opposed to this bill because I see it as an attack on the family, on true diversity. How more diverse could you be between a male and a female? You put two males together or two females, you have sterility. And I can identify with the pain that many of our neighbors have expressed. I stood on the 19th floor of the YMCA in Chicago, contemplating the sidewalk. And I think it's only by God's grace that I didn't. I'm a married man. I'm a father of four children. I live in West Salem. And I don't think that any amount of legislation or law will ever ease the need for love in heterosexual or homosexual person. And I think that the case before you that you have to vote on and consider, you're being pressured to do that, and I pray to God that He will lead you in your decision. Thank you for hearing me out.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Alberto Guillen. Thank you for the opportunity to give my opinion. I'm here as a first and foremost as a Christian, and I feel that this bill is an attack on my religious freedom. I believe that this is an imposition by criminalizing my point of view and gagging me from expressing. We hear a lot of emotional rhetoric about hate, But what is very interesting, the homosexual agenda has utilized the banner of tolerance, while in fact they are the most virulent attackers of Christians, that in many ways are the only ones praying for them and seeking that they will change their lifestyle for a better lifestyle. And somehow we are in some way accused of hate mongers, we're given labels, and they themselves claim to be tolerant. And I find appalling at the fact that looking at the panel here, all I have heard from you up front is that you are more pro the bill than being unbiased for the bill. I have found a tremendous bias from all of you, and I pray that you will seek the counsel of God, because you were installed by God in your position. And in America, you're not monarchs, you're public servers. And I pray that you will take it to heart to serve the public in general and not be manipulated by a homosexual agenda that has a very well-funded entourage of attorneys and monies. And although they bring some of the unfortunate victims of bad people with bad will, nevertheless, I pray that you will consider very seriously that you cannot criminalize. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Don Rappel, and I'm speaking as a private citizen. It has been stated tonight that Senate Bill 2 and 500 is good for the Oregonians, for all Oregonians. If this is such a good bill, this needs to be put up to the voters for decision and not left up to the legislature. I would encourage these bills be defeated and be referred to the voters. We live in a republic. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Frank Dixon, Daryl Mock, and Anthony Britton.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and committee members. My name is Frank Dixon. I'm a member of the Basic Rights Oregon's Board of Directors. Basic Rights Oregon's mission is to eliminate discrimination based on sexual orientation. And as such, it's really not much of a surprise that we are supporting the legislation. But we are especially pleased and excited to note that in addition to the longtime support of many who serve on the committee and in the body, Senate Bill 2 reflects the work of the Governor's Task Force, which was drawn from the breadth and depth of Oregonians. This bill is not a product of an advocacy group. It is the product of Oregon and Oregonians who believe that taking a stand against discrimination is taking a stand for Oregon, regardless of one's sexual orientation. For more than 30 years, Oregonians who care about fairness and equality for all Oregon citizens have asked the state to pass a law making it illegal to discriminate based on sexual orientation. After all this time, and when a majority of Oregonians recognize this discrimination as shameful and wrong, there is no longer any justifiable excuse for failing to pass this bill, which guarantees that all Oregonians may live, work, and travel in Oregon free from the humiliating sting of discrimination. Just want to point out that Dave Vedanke pulled me aside and mentioned the fact that Oregon does protect folks from discrimination when they choose a religion or when they choose to change their religion. So this issue of whether sexual orientation is a choice or not, and whether we protect people in situations where there is a choice, it doesn't hold water. We do protect people from religious discrimination, and Basic Rights Oregon stands for that fact. Thank you for the opportunity to share my views on this important matter. I urge you to support Senate Bill 2.
Thank you. And before we move to our next witness, I want to announce the next panel of opponents will be Carolyn Wendell, Justin Chessington, and R. Scott Stewart. So welcome. Who wants to go next?
Hello, my name is Anthony Britton. I thank you all for taking the time to hear us and to read over this bill. I didn't come prepared necessarily. Didn't know I was going to be doing this, so please bear with me. I'm a student at Chemeketa. I have been for about a year and a half. I have also been in the penal system in Oregon prisons, and I want to say that I've been sexually harassed, physically, mentally, emotionally in those prisons, and I've worked with the authorities to do what they told me to do in those places. And as a prisoner, I had no way of escape of these travesties. And I just encourage you guys to look at these bills and know that it does affect people in prison. And I know you're trying to rehabilitate these people. And I was placed next to rapists and hate people that are in for hate crimes. And I think deliberately at times, at a lot of the time. So please pass the bill. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Daryl L.C. Moak. I am here as a citizen, ordained minister, and advocate, and as a black man who is part of the gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender community. I am here to support Senate Bill 2. As a black man, I have lived in the shadows facing racism and discrimination. As a gay, bisexual man, I have lived with the sure threat of homophobia and the isolation and second-class personhood that brings. Just as sure as you'd want the best for yourselves, your children, families, and communities, just as you would want to be free of fear being discarded, mistreated, and abused because of who you are, the color of your skin, the gender of your birth, age, religion, or class, so do I want to be free from those things. I also want to be free from discrimination because of my sexuality. My sexuality is not a choice. I am not wanting any special rights or to be treated with any particular favor. I am asking to be respected and treated as any other human with certain unalienable rights. I have lived through many forms of discrimination, but here and now, in this moment of time, you have the power, authority, and responsibility to ensure that all Oregon is free from the last vestiges of discrimination. No matter what we believe, personally, theologically, or ethically, it is morally wrong to discriminate against anyone. Discrimination in any form is wrong, and it hurts everyone. Here and now, you can prove that in Oregon, all citizens, regardless of race, ethnicity, gender, orientation, are provided with equal protection under the law. I am here to speak in support of Senate Bill 2. Justice means that all people will be offered fairness, compassion in all of our dealings. Fairness and compassion equal justice equal Senate Bill 2. This is the next logical step in ridding our state and country of the last remnants of injustice that has plagued us since our beginnings. I am asking you to take the bold step, as many have before you in this place and all across the country, who dare to believe in the true principles of America and in the Creed of Oregon. Dare to be the leaders that we so desperately need now. Stand toe-to-toe and shoulder-to-shoulder with our great forefathers and foremothers who dared brave the prairie, conquer the elements, and build this great state of ours. But stand up now and do what so many have not chosen to do, end discrimination where it lives in our fair state. Make just and fair treatment of the Oregon law. It is the right thing to do. I would like to thank you, the members of the Senate, for allowing me to this opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 2, and I urge you in the depth of my experience and my heart to support the Oregon Equality Act.
Thank you. Okay. Now we will have Carolyn Wendell, Justin Chessington, and Scott Stewart, R. Scott Stewart. Welcome.
Hi. Hello there. My name is Carolyn Wendell, and I have an apostolate called Vocal. It's a Roman Catholic advocacy group with over 600 people on the email list. Please forgive the typos in my statement. I had a six-month-old grandson sitting on my lap, so I didn't get a chance to clean this up. I've been married 40 years, have 5 kids, and 14 grandchildren. Here's my testimony. As by the way, there was a gal here that has a lesbian mother, so she knows all about growing up in a in a family like that, and she loves her mom dearly. So we're all made of all sorts of people. In my opinion, Senate Bill 2 and 500 are unnecessary. The long list of people testifying in favor of this bill shows that the homosexual community is well represented. There are no ghettos compromised of homosexuals. Their standing of living is better than most and can be attested to on the Hove and Garden shows on TV. Homosexuals are well represented in all areas, even the Democrat Party. Extensive laws in the books already protect the dignity of all citizens. SB 2 and SB 500 want extraordinary rights. The term sexual orientation is a loaded term. This bill is extreme and would legalize and protect every form of sexual expression and behavior, no matter how disordered. There's no definition. It's all subjective. Sexual orientation seems to be based on what gives a person sexual pleasure, animal, vegetable, or mineral. Basic freedoms and rights of the common man would be censored. Churches, synagogues, and mosques would all be affected. Goodness, beauty, and truth, the basis of all religions, will be replaced with a subjective world of pleasing one's genitals. I believe that the bottom line of this legislation is to sexually indoctrinate children from the earliest age. Since the 60s, the old adage has been, sex before 8 or it's too late. With this legislation, the doors would be open even wider for access to our innocent children. Since many men and women have bailed on their responsibilities as moral protector, the climate of in secular and religious worlds have opened the door to the destruction
okay,
of what...
You're out of time
okay.
now, but we have your written statement.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Welcome.
Ready to press the button?
Ready.
I had something written down. I'm not going to say it. I've heard a lot of things tonight, and there's a lot of pain here tonight.
Thank you.
Scott Stewart. I'm just here on my own. Thank you for suffering through all the testimony. You guys, I admire that. You do this night after night. You know, I guess that's why God sent a Savior. It's because there's a lot of pain. And you've heard a lot of testimony about discrimination. It's really not about discrimination. It's about acceptance. And it's about values. And right now in our state, we're faced with whose values do we agree on? Whose measuring stick do we use? And that's really not something that you guys should have to decide on, is whose measuring stick do we use. And I hear a lot of things about religion. And it's not about religion. It's about a relationship. And that's what a lot of people I hear tonight are seeking, is a true relationship. And they seem to have found it in their sexual orientation or their lifestyle, their values and their choices. Everybody has values. Everybody has choices. Whose values are right and whose values are wrong? And that's why God set us a Savior. He set his Savior because he's the only one that can mend that. And he's the one that said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." But we don't want to listen to that. We want to choose to do what we want to do. And what you're hearing tonight is you're hearing a group of people who are angry, hurt, frustrated. Hey, try being a Christian and stand up for your faith. I tell you what, I've taken a lot of heat for that. And that's why Jesus came. He came to mend that broken bridge. And really, isn't that what this is all about tonight, is acceptance?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, the next three will be Christine Burnett, Travis Preslaw, and Carrie Johnson. I apologize for the lack of notice on this one. And the next, after this panel, the next panel of opponents will be, this looks like Mr. Hayden, Rebecca Griffo, and Rick Corberry. Welcome.
Good evening. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I urge you to support Senate
Bill. Can you identify yourself for the record?
Sure. My name is Carrie Johnson. I'm an African-American transsexual man. I'm a board member of a social justice organization called Brother to Brother, which serves gay, bisexual, and transgendered African-American men. I'm also a civil rights investigator with the state of Oregon.
But on a more personal note, I'm a good, reliable employee. I pay my taxes, and I'm a model tenant. I try to show kindness and respect to everyone that I interact with. I'm a good citizen of Oregon. Despite these valuable qualities, as a trans man, I enjoy less civil rights protection than a non-trans heterosexual person who contributes very little to society. I can't feel safe living or traveling throughout our beautiful state because of these inferior protections. When I leave the city of Portland, I fear even more everything from verbal harassment to physical assault if someone recognizes me as a trans man. In most parts of our state, I'm vulnerable to being fired despite my stellar work performance. If my poor employer doesn't like trans people and there are no laws to protect me, I'm vulnerable to being evicted despite being a model tenant and there are no laws to protect me. I'm vulnerable to being refused service at a restaurant or hotel despite my respectful conduct and there are no laws to protect me. I'd like to ask a question. I've heard of quite a few folks talk about special rights this evening. And I'd like to know who decided that making a living, living under a roof, and spending money in local businesses is a special right.
Thank you. You're out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Christine Burnett, and I've been transitioning from a male to a female, and I've known ever since I was 5 years old when I asked my mother to put me in a pink dress of who I was. I want to go back to a little over 2 years ago. I was in the hospital for 5 weeks for bypass open heart surgery. It was over 6 months before I could finally get out to a restaurant with my partner. We were in a booth waiting to be served, and we were asked, are you female or male? And I thought to myself, oh my God, here I am in the 21st century. And I went back to when I was approximately 11 years old, and I spent 3 years in Stanton, Virginia, where I was in a booth, and some people next to that booth who were colored, were had a dark tan, and the waitress asked them, are you white or are you colored? And they said, we are white. She said, your skin does not show that. You have to leave this premises. And tears came to my eyes, because here we are in the 21st century and being asked who we were. And I just hope you pass this bill. And also, in case I got time, many years ago I was in New York, living there, and some young high school kids thought it was fun to take one of the high school students who was a homosexual, and they dragged him in his truck. And there was nothing to protect that person to be dragged. I don't want to see this. Just give us our basic equality rights, please, for all of us. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Travis Prinslow. A few years ago in Canby, Oregon, I was working for a beauty sales retail industry, and I was fired for being gay. It is real. It happens on a regular basis. Another friend of mine working for the same company also was fired when he came out as a homosexual male. It happens on a regular basis. In high school, I was constantly harassed. We've heard a lot of stories today about harassment and pain and suffering that happens on a daily basis. It's real. We need to stop it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Hayden, no idea whether I got that name right. Rebecca Griffo and Rick Carberry.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Rebecca Griffo, and I'm from Beaverton, Oregon. I'm a wife and mother of an 11-year-old daughter, a long-term resident of Oregon. I oppose Senate Bill 2. First, I want to say that I know there's a lot of pain, and I'm sorry the people that have testified, and I'm very sorry for the pain they've suffered. But I think that there's something more to address here. And what I just wanted to point to is the part about education. As a mother, I'm concerned that the bad language of this bill in regards to public education would require Oregon schools to teach on the subject of gay and lesbian sexuality in a manner that would seem to normalize it. I think this is dangerous because many studies have shown that persons participating in homosexual activity or lifestyles are at a significantly greater risk for multiple STDs, including HPV, hepatitis, gonorrhea, syphilis, GBS, HIV, plus many types of cancer. I know that's personal, but it's what the facts bear out. Also, they suffer from increased rates of domestic violence, alcoholism, depression, and sadly, suicide. And I do have something that I would like to submit later to show that, you know, where those statistics are coming from. Anyway, they at higher rates than their heterosexual counterparts. And ultimately, sadly, one study has indicated that the life expectancy of gay men is, on average, 14 years less than for all men. The way this bill is worded would appear to not allow full disclosure of how dangerous this lifestyle actually is, and it would be a great disservice to our children to leave them with the impression that it's okay and healthy. Am I out of time?
You're out of time.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Madam Chair, could I remind folks that you don't need to be up so close to the microphone because it actually causes vibration. It'll pick you up 12 inches back.
Well, I wish I'd known that sooner.
I knew. We heard you, but we can hear you just fine when you're sick.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome.
It's good to be here. My name is Rick Carberry from Portland. I'm privileged to be in front of public servants as yourself. I see the bill, a state bill, number two, as unnecessary, restrictive, and flawed to the businesses and the religious communities in our state. I just wanted to relay something that not happened, but where I've worked, a larger company in Portland, they have a sensitivity and non-discriminatory program policy in place, and this policy involves minorities, and within that is the homosexuals. I get along great with minorities at work. What the policy says that if there's a discussion about homosexuality, you can't speak against it. If a fellow worker sees that there's a conversation going on about that, they're to report it. I just wanted to relate that to you, that even if I oppose homosexuality, I can't speak against it where I work. And I tried to think of a little saying, is that what is one man's freedom muzzles another. That's all I have.
Thank you. Okay. Next we'll have Catherine Babbitt. Thank you. Jim McGuire and Ellen Howard. And the next opponents will be Lisa Learn, Paul Henkel, and Isla Henkel.
My name is Catherine Babbitt, and I'm going to talk to you about one of the reasons that this bill is desperately needed. I'm queer, European American Jewish, a person with disabilities, and a woman with a visible beard. People have harassed me and discriminated against me for all these parts of my identity, but the hostility that I face as a woman with a beard is much greater than anything I face as a queer or as a Jew or as a person with disabilities. I used to ride the bus to work every day, and it was a terrible experience. One person used to turn in their seat to stare at me the whole time that I was on the bus, and this happened every time we were on the same bus. There were people who refused to move over and let me sit down, even, you know, when I was desperate to sit down because my back hurt. Groups of people would stare at me, whisper, and point at me. And then there was a person who just started yelling that I was not a real woman. And not a single bus driver ever did anything about that. My life improved immensely when I stopped riding the bus. People on the street habitually yell insults at me and ask highly intrusive personal questions. There's only been one time when somebody threw something at me, but I live with a lot of fear of physical assault. It's really horrible to always have to keep your guard up, always having it in the back of your mind that maybe today is going to be the day when the harassment gets really frightening, as opposed to just the constant low-level rudeness. Senate Bill 2 doesn't directly deal with the way that many people harass me, but you can't separate the hostility that I face every day from the legislative climate. When Oregon has no law protecting me from transphobic discrimination, then it's a message to everyone in Oregon that people like me are not worth protecting. Laws prohibiting sexual harassment haven't ended sexual harassment that happens outside workplaces, but they've made it less acceptable, and we need Senate Bill 2 to make this kind of discrimination less acceptable.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Ellen Howard. I'm speaking from my heart about my family. I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm a great-grandmother. I also am a fifth-generation Oregonian. I live in Salem, Oregon. I write books for children. I teach. I'm the leader of the lay ministry of my church. I have four children, as I said, and three of them are straight, and one is gay. They're all daughters. They're all beautiful, as any mother would tell you. They're all intelligent. At this point in their lives, they're middle-aged women. They're all hard workers. They're all contributing citizens to the state of Oregon. My only question to the legislature is why one of my four daughters does not have the same protections under law that the other three have. And that's what I'm asking, is that Senate Bill 2 be passed so that they are equal under the law. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I also submitted written testimony, and I've edited down my comments. My name is James McGuire. I am here today as an Oregonian, a partner of 13 years, and a decorated Naval Academy graduate who served during the first Gulf War. I work in our state's Silicon Forest for a high-tech manufacturing firm in Tualatin, and my partner works for a national airline. I'm here today to urge you to vote yes on Senate Bill 2. We moved to Oregon for my job in July 2001, and I was appointed by the Beaverton City Council to the city's Human Rights Advisory Commission in January 2002 and elected chair by my peers in 2003. After the Oregon State Legislature failed to pass statewide non-discrimination legislation during the 2003 session, I recommended to the Commission that we submit a citywide non-discrimination ordinance to the Beaverton City Council. My logic at the time, this is absolutely the right thing to do, and if our elected representatives were unwilling or unable to pass this important legislation and necessary legislation at the state level, we would show them county by county, city by city, town by town, that Oregon citizens want this legislation, agree with this legislation, and we would pass it locally ourselves until Salem got the message loud and clear. In May of 2006, Josh and I bought a home in Hillsboro. I was initially dismayed to realize that moving to Hillsboro was going to strip us of important legal protections we enjoyed in Beaverton. Simply by moving 60 blocks, one zip code, we were to be stripped of what I consider basic human rights: protection from discrimination, including harassment, free employment, access to housing, and to public accommodation. In 2006, the Hillsboro City Council received a standing ovation from the packed chamber for the unanimous vote to pass a citywide non-discrimination in Hillsboro. Madam Chair, members of the committee, don't make me do this again. I do not want to, nor should I have to, fight for basic protections for my family and fellow citizens each and every time I move to a new town in our beautiful state. You and your fellow legislators have it in your power to make this unnecessary. Please pass this legislation so I can enjoy my new home in Hillsborough, secure in the knowledge that my job in Tualatin and Josh's at PDX cannot be threatened by discrimination, that we can feel secure going to a restaurant anywhere in Oregon without worrying about being turned away because we're a couple, and that we can feel secure in our knowledge that we will not be denied the ability to purchase our next home.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. Now we'll take Lisa Learn, Paul Hinkle, and Isla Hinkle. And the next proponent panel will be Gabriel Dallison and Corey Bruch and Matt Friday. That will be the panel after this one. This panel will be Lisa Learn, Paul Hinkle, and Isla Hinkle. Maybe no Hinkles. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Lisa Learn. I live in Salem, Oregon. I'm representing myself and hopefully many other men and women who may or may not be here. I have, according to this bill, who you have sex with is relevant, not only in employment, but in other walks of life, and we are being asked not to discriminate based on someone's sexual preferences. As an employer, sexual orientation is not obvious unless you have posted on your job application. Do you have sex with men, women, or both? You are not going to know, nor is it relevant. And do not care to know about someone's sexual preferences, race, gender, age, or obvious characteristics. It is easy to discriminate based on obvious characteristics. If a business person is prejudiced against a certain race and someone of that race walks in to apply for a job, they may already determine not to hire that person. But if a person applies for a job and it so happens they like to have sex with the same sex, how would an employer know that? They won't. Unless you tell them. Are we going to mandate that all job applications ask what a person's sexual orientation is? Doesn't that also infringe on a citizen's right to privacy? Also, Section 2 and 29.1 are very broad in their scope. They say that the state wants to protect citizens' health, safety, and morals from the consequences of intergroup hostility, tensions, and practices of discrimination of any kind. Also, you can be charged with discrimination even if it's intended or unintended. So I have a hypothetical situation. Say I am a business owner, which is why I start off in the beginning section. I don't really care what a person does at home or in public, for that matter. I just want to hire people based on what they can do. But So I'm conservative. I listen to talk radio. I launch into a personal opinion about homosexuality. No expletives, no name calling, just an honest discourse. This bill is so broad it would be possible to bring me up on discrimination charges because my homosexual employee may feel threatened or offended. Okay, is it discriminatory to have? Well, one more thing. I am a child of a homosexual, and I have strong views on homosexuality, and it is my viewpoint that they want me to accept their viewpoint, and I have to say this, please let me say it, it's really important. I do have strong views on homosexuality, and since I was raised in a homosexual household, I'm more than qualified to address this issue. I'm 45 years old and have never once witnessed any acts of discrimination to those homosexuals who are close to me. Most of them are mid to upper class professionals with affluence and influence. Because currently we live in a free society with First Amendment rights, I've had many friendly debates.
I'm going to cut you off now because the people that you're taking the time away
okay.
from
I'm terribly sorry.
That's okay.
And I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Gabriel Dallison, Corey Bruch, and Matt Friday. And then the next opponents will be Rachel Jansen, Mary Lee Souter, and Dwight West. Welcome.
Madam Chair, Senators, thank you. My name is Gabriel Dalson. I'm a 29-year-old man and a recent graduate of Portland State University and a mathematician. One of the things I would like to point out as in my capacity as a private citizen is I've heard a lot of people talking about the children here, and I am one of those in the sense that Corey Bruch, the man to my right, has been my best friend since age 11. And I do apologize if I'm doing anything untoward, but his mother and her wife as I believe they are lesbians. So if this law is such a contagion, such a taint, I have been stewing in it for, at this point, right around 20 years, with a little less. And what I would like to communicate to you is that in all my time seeing them and having been welcomed into their family, their homosexuality is virtually irrelevant. They do the same things everybody else does. They can do the same things everybody else does. And for the life of me, I cannot see why arguments are being made against the fact that anything a straight person does, save conceive a child with their chosen partner, a straight person can do, be that build a home, be that live under a certain roof, be that spend money. I mean, those two women raised one of the best men I know. He's been my best friend forever, like I said, and they deserve all the protection and all the equal rights that any other citizen receives. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Corey Bruch. I live in Portland. And as you gave me the lesson that you said, my mother is a lesbian. Listening to these statements, I'd just like to kind of respond to some things I've heard. I've heard people complain that the idea of homosexuality is being forced into their lives, forced into their businesses. First of all, I'd like to point out that homosexuality has already existed in their homes, has already existed in their businesses. The people, the homosexual individuals, have been there. They have been living in fear. They have been living in terror. What we're asking for is that these people be allowed to live their lives without fear, without terror, with being able to live their lives as they are. A lot of people are afraid of being branded as hate mongers. Well, you know, I'm not here to say what anyone else feels. They know themselves what they feel in their hearts. I'm not calling anyone a hateful person. However, someone else pointed out that laws against discrimination have not protected black people. I would like to see that person stand in front of the African community as a whole and make the same claim that laws have not protected them from harassment and see what sort of response they receive. As for harassment that I have received directly, one example that I give before is that if employers are allowed to discriminate against homosexuals, one of the things that families such as mine don't receive are health care. Now, compared to my, you know, in comparison between my family and heterosexual family, my family has had to spend more health care since the time I was, more money on health care since the time I was a child, that those other parents were putting into their college funds. As a result, I'm actually more of a burden financially to the state than I would have been.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Matt Friday. I'm from Eugene, Oregon. My partner of 21 years and I have 20 nieces and nephews between us, many of whom we've helped raise, some of them older than when we first got together, are serving in the military. We have terrific support across that large family for our relationship. We have been guardians for some of those kids and guardians for other people's kids as well in these 21 years. We've contributed as much as we can to making a society that we believe is strong, is moral, and accepts everybody for their differences. While other people have said what this sums up for them in their mind, in my mind it's about diversity. How in the world do you make this a level playing field for everybody? That's a big deal. My partner and I, over the years, have provided gay history courses to high schools and colleges. Actually, we were invited to do that by those high schools and colleges. And during those lectures, we'll talk to students about the importance of hearing this information, not only in terms of hearing a group's history and how that group interacts with the rest of societies around the world, but also to understand that they'll be working with gay co-workers and gay bosses. I'm a boss. I have an editorial group. I do editorial. I work as an editor in educational publishing. The respect in that group goes both ways. It counts that people know who I am and that they see somebody who is unafraid and who can lead them forward in the things that need to be done in their jobs. These are careers. It matters. I've heard people talk about special rights. If there's anything like special rights that we're asking for here, it's only that we have the same rights that other people already take for granted, that they already have. They know that they can go and get a house, that they can eat in a restaurant, that they can have everything that they want, that their heterosexuality is not going to make them an issue. But it can make us an issue. If that means special rights, asking for the right to be treated equally, well, then what kind of special rights can we be granting them? That they don't have to go in and tell everybody right off the bat, I'm a heterosexual and I would like to eat here.
Thank you. You're out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Now we will have Rachel Jansen, Marilee Souter, and Dwight West. I want to remind everyone that we will close off the public hearing at 9 o'clock, and I appreciate everybody's patience and willingness to stay within the time limits. Welcome.
Madam Chair, honorable members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, thank you for listening to my comment today. My name is Rachel Jansen. I am a longtime resident of Clackamas, Oregon. I'm a taxpayer, mother, wife, and registered nurse and private tutor. I'm here to speak opposing SB 2 and SB 500. I'm concerned about governmental intrusion into religious liberty. That's number one. And number two, the clause, including aiding and abetting an unlawful practice. These bills will discriminate and promote lawsuits against health professionals, counselors, churches, and pastors who are sought out to help a person change their sexual identity and orientation. There are thousands of people who have changed their orientation from gay to straight. I would encourage you to go to the website peoplecanchange.com. These citizens who desire to change their orientation deserve protection, too. This bill will discriminate against those people and their right to speak out about how they can change and what they need to do. Also, I brought the Compass Points, the newsletter for the Boy Scouts of America. It says, 100 years of scouting, 1910 to 2010, when tradition meets tomorrow. Scouters are concerned about this bill, too, because of its implications for private organizations. If you read under the section there on the first page, it talks about associations. Scouters are concerned about this. Please do not count on the courts to protect our liberty. We are asking you to help protect our freedoms, and please do not pass this bill.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, Madam Chairman, members of the Senate. My name is Chelsea Jansen. I'm actually filling in for Marilee Souter. I'm an 18-year-old high school student from Amity, Oregon, and I just wanted to come before you today and let you know that I have many gay friends. And I try to reach out to them in Christ's love. I'm not a hater, and I'm not a discriminist, but I don't agree with their alternative lifestyle. I try to lead them to the truth of God's word. And I'm actually, in fact, discriminated against for doing just that. I have felt more persecution towards my moral standards and my faith in the Lord Jesus Christ than any of my gay friends for their lifestyle. As a citizen of Oregon and as a Christian, and yes, even a future performing arts major, I'm very much involved with theater and that kind of flamboyant stuff, I strongly oppose this bill. Please, I urge you not to pass this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Bonnie Tinker, Toby Hill Meyer, and Terry Dempsey.
Good evening. I'm Bonnie Tinker. Oh, better?
A little bit.
Okay. The first time I testified before the Oregon legislature asking for protection from discrimination, I was a young woman. I think that was probably 1973, the first time this came up. I'm not a young woman anymore. I am now a grandmother of three. My spouse, Sarah, and I my spouse of nearly 30 years, I might add, have raised three children. Our baby is just about the age I was when I first testified here at the Oregon Legislature. It is about time that we stop talking about this and pass some legislation for fairness. My first girlfriend's parents, Chuck and Rita Knapp, some of you may know them, were some of the first parents in Oregon to testify on behalf of their lesbian and gay children. My own parents, Methodist ministers, taught me that justice and equality are owed to the citizens by the government, to all citizens, and that the right time for justice is always now. This is the time for justice for lesbian, gay, bi, and trans people in Oregon. I'm wearing today a necklace that my mother's parents gave to her, which she gave to me, which I will pass down someday to my daughter and eventually to a granddaughter. Just as we pass these things down to our children, we also pass our values down, our legacy. It's time in Oregon that we pass a legacy down to our children, that we value all people, and that we will stand up opposing discrimination against all people. I'm here not only on behalf of my family, but also as the executive director of Love Makes a Family, an organization of lesbian, gay, bi, and trans families. Our children face many hurdles because of the social prejudice against their parents. You've heard about some of these here tonight. They should not face the additional obstacles of their parents having difficulty finding housing or keeping a job because of discrimination. As a parent, I was denied rental housing once. I also lost one job because I was a lesbian. Discrimination is always hard to fight. It's especially hard to fight when there is no law which prohibits discrimination against you. I am very happy that you are once again about to outlaw discrimination. And I want to say again, it's time. I also want to tell you that I am here as a Quaker, one might say as a Bible-believing Christian. My Quaker meeting, Multnomah Monthly meeting, supports equality for all people as a part of our religious testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You got a little tiny bit of extra time because you've been around for 30 years.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Toby Hillmeyer. I'm a Lane County resident and also a board member of the national organization CLOSH, Children of Lesbians and Gays Everywhere, on whose behalf I speak tonight. I would like to say that as someone with lesbian mothers myself, I want to speak to the fear and terror that comes with watching a parent face discrimination and being powerless to stop it. CLOSH has provided support to and seen firsthand youth who have had to pick up their lives and move to another school as their parents or parent flees discrimination or relocating due to an inability to find work. Youth face these issues in schools too, either as children of lesbian, gay, or bisexual or transgender parents, or as lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender students themselves. I myself, as a transgender student, left my school early after receiving a death threat. A trans woman in high school I know is dealing with ongoing harassment and having things thrown at her. I know a number of transgender high school students, many of whom have dropped out due to harassment and discrimination at school or not being able to access restroom facilities and having to hold it for 7 hours at a time. That does not surprise me. What does surprise me is the bravery of trans students like the one I know who doesn't drop out after having things thrown at her and fearing for her safety. Senate Bill 2 is necessary to end this discrimination and make our schools safe for our state's youth. And on a final note, I would like to point out that there is no current Oregon law, and really no law, that could prevent a man in a dress or even a man in a suit from following someone into a woman's room to assault them.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Terry Dempsey. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I am represented by Senator Burdick. And I appreciate all of you taking the time to hear all these many hours of testimony. As a homeowner and a self-employed entrepreneur, I'm pretty much at a stage in life where I have little exposure to personal discrimination in housing or employment. I am here, however, for future generations in the same way that the generation before me paved the way for my life to be better as a gay man. It's been nearly 40 years since the gay rights movement started with the Stonewall riots, so we are now into a third generation of Americans struggling for basic equality and fairness under the law. In the bills before you, sexual orientation is defined at least in part on perceived sexuality. At 6'6", 230 pounds, and a pretty mainstream presentation, I've really had the luxury in my adult life of being out only where I want to be and with whom I want to be. I came out in a Fortune 500 timber and paper corporation in San Francisco in the mid-80s where I lived, and there were only a handful of gay employees there. I was denied advancement to a higher grade position. When I asked the HR manager why, because I felt that I was genuinely better qualified than the other in-house candidate, she said, "You've got the wrong genitalia." I think it's safe to conclude that her comment was a euphemism for my being gay. I left there soon after that and moved to an employer that was just the polar opposite. I worked for one of the largest national law firms, Pillsbury Madison and Sutro, now Pillsbury Winthrop, where there were lots of gay and lesbian employees, including partners, associates, and staff. In the early 90s, I was involved in organizing a GLBT group there to make an already friendly work environment even better. We were able to move the firm to offer all the employee benefits offered to married employees, to gays and lesbians, thereby recognizing our partnerships and families as completely equal. Pillsbury was the first large international law firm in the country to do so. It was a fantastic feeling to leave a company who perpetuated ignorance and bigotry to be a part of one who embraced the real family values, the real American values of inclusion, fairness, and equal opportunity.
Terry, we're going to have to wrap it up. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You cut off a constituent, but there you have it. Okay.
I'm sorry?
Constituent, yeah. Okay. We have Anthony and Tammy Broughton, maybe? Alan Billier and Nellie Lunger. Okay, they do not seem to be here. If they show up, they'll be next. Victoria Verano, Nadia Garamenko, and Peter and Natalia Shalashoff. Out of all those names I called, you come up. Welcome. Okay, I called too many, so... When you identify yourself, let's just have three, and then when those three identify themselves, I'll cross you off and I'll take the next three next time. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Victoria Veronica, and I am from Salem. I am a mother of three girls, and that's exactly the reason why I am here tonight. Senate Bill SB2 and 500 does not provide protection for children. I want you to picture the following. A sexual predator dressed as a woman comes into the woman's bathroom. He has the freedom to assault, to molest, and rape. And I would pledge you to protect our most innocent, our future, our children. We need to protect them and not to give ways for sexual predators to attack them. Also, I would like to ask the government to stay away from people's personal lives and not to impose the chosen group of people's views to everybody else. Let people keep their private lives to themselves. Thank you.
Thank you. I just can't resist saying that the crime you described is a very serious felony under Oregon law and would remain so, whether this bill or any other passes.
Right. If I may add, you know, so are the other crimes. They're crimes, and we don't need any more bills on the top of those. Thank you.
Welcome.
Those people who need the translation, and Mark Borelli, who will represent them as a translator.
My name is Peter. Я благодарен этому государству, Америке, за то, что меня приняли в это государство.
I'm thankful for the government to allow me to live in this country.
His name?
Как вас зовут?
Peter.
Peter.
My name is Peter.
Peter Shalashov.
Я имею 5 сыновей и 5 дочерей.
I have 5 sons and 5 daughters.
И 10 внуков, 11 внуков.
And 11 grandchildren.
Я обеспокоен тем, что этот закон хотят, хотят принять.
I'm worried about this bill becoming law.
Я когда жил не в этом государстве, я был пастором.
When I lived in another country, I was a pastor.
Я был в коммунистической стране жил.
I lived in a communist country.
И даже в этой атеистической стране никогда не принимался такой закон.
And even in an atheistic country, there was no such laws passed.
Я не имею ни приязни к этим людям.
I don't have any offense to these people.
Я люблю этих людей.
I love these people.
И я понимаю, что их нужно лечить.
I understand that they should be treated.
А лечение только в Иисусе Христе.
And treatment is only in Jesus Christ.
Если мы посмотрим на библейскую историю,
if we look at Bible history,
в Содоме и Гоморре занимались лесбиянством.
In Sodom and Gomorrah there was lesbianism.
И они сгорели.
And they burned.
Я провозглашаю, God bless America.
And I proclaim, God bless America.
Чтобы Америка не сгорела.
So that America will not burn.
И чтобы вы не принимали этого закона.
So that you would not pass this bill.
Спасибо.
Thank you.
Спасибо. Is that Russian?
Спасибо, это по-русски.
Yes.
Welcome.
Hi, my name is Anthony Broughton. My wife Tammy. We pass these over here. So you're able to get them. Having never had the opportunity to do this before, I'm a little shaky, so bear with me. This is going to be kind of a very brief and kind of our view. First off, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. We are proud to be...
Would you give your name? You may have already, but...
Yes, I have.
Okay.
It's Anthony Broughton.
Thank you.
And Tammy. Proud to be a part of a representative government, a government where we the people make the choices of our laws that govern our social issues. This is a government of, for, and by the people, and we make the changes to it, not elected officials or judges behind the bench in some courtroom that have no business but to interpret the laws that exist to see if they will conform to the Constitution, a document written of, for, and by the people. A landmark case in 2004, Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court struck a blow against the family, as I'm sure you know. The court forgot its place in the governmental structure, and the ruling meant that our society is supposed to be indifferent to social tyranny. We the people do not have a vote. Since this legislature has taken upon itself to mandate social reform without the vote of the people who have elected them, where is the tyranny going to stop? This hearing is not a vote of the people and has little to do with the process of involving the people of the state to really voice their opinion in this matter. We are Christians and do not believe that SB 2 or SB 500 are moral or fair. These are our convictions and they will not change. But we also believe in a representative government. This legislature is not allowing the voice of its constituents to vote, and it is the will of the people to make these choices in social reform. What is the culture of this country? What are our underpinnings? We respect hard work and we are self-reliant. We respect human life and we are a religious people. We are a purpose-driven people founded on the family unit, and we think that every child deserves to have a mother and a father. So if this social reform is so important, then put it before the people to vote on it and let them have the say.
Okay, you're out of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
Okay, we will take one more panel of supporters, one more panel of opponents, and that is our time limit here. My apologies to those that we won't get to. So the last supporters, James Kirk, Natalie Frenner, and Laura Smithers. Welcome.
Members of the committee, some of you have seen me in the halls. My name is James Kirk. I'm the security monitor here at the Oregon State Capitol. The Bush administration and the religious right say that they are about freedom and justice and bringing them to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan. Yet, both are denying the freedom to justice to American, taxpaying Americans here in the United States. excuse me. If people don't believe that people are fired or forced out of their job because of sexual orientation, I am here to tell you otherwise. I was fired from a job in Phoenix, Arizona because I was perceived to be gay. I came to Oregon to escape a climate of hate and prejudice only to find it exists here. Only last week, a good friend of mine was fired from a local business here in Salem because he was gay. Homosexuality is unchangeable nature. It is not a lifestyle choice. If you don't believe me, go to the zoo or watch Animal Planet. I would like to quote the 1791 Treaty of Tripoli that states, as the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. As for the people who keep bringing up the Bible, I'd like to know when they're starting to introduce legislation banning haircuts, shaving, reintroducing slavery and tattoos, as those are all supported by the Bible. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Hi, my name is Napoline Frenner, and I'm from Eugene. I'm here tonight to show my support for Senate Bill 2. When my partner and I are discriminated against, it does not only affect us, it also affects and hurts our two children, ages 8 and 10. I really appreciate that so many people here tonight have been here in support of children, but I also need to say that there are actually children of gay parents out there as well. My partner were to lose her job due to discrimination, my children and myself would be losing our primary economic support. If my partner and I lose our housing, it's our entire family that will be without a home. And my partner and I are not the only ones. If we go for accommodation someplace and we're denied accommodations, you know, my children are going to see that, gosh, their parents are turned away from a hotel or from a restaurant because they're gay. My partner and I are not the only ones that need this bill. My children need it. They need their family protected in the ways that this bill offers. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Laura Smithers. I'm a resident of Albany, and I am speaking not as a gay woman, but as a rational human and a constituent. As Senate Bill 2 relates to religion, just a few things, the truth of the message of God, which we heard lots about tonight, is not hate and discrimination. Discrimination is not a Christian worldview. Individuals do not have the right to practice religious sanctioned discrimination. There is no constitutional right to the practice or mandate of religion in the public sphere, i.e. the workforce. There is, however, a constitutional separation of church and state. And we are a country founded on morality, but is it moral to discriminate on attributes completely unrelated to ability? These were all issues that were raised against Senate Bill 2, which are fundamentally against what we were founded on. As for the legal aspect, it's very clear that we've heard that the will of the majority is against the rights for gays, but the role of the government is to protect the minority, not the majority. A lack of legal protection for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community is absolutely de facto support of discrimination. We have also heard of talk of special rights for the LGBT community. Equal rights are not special rights, they are just equal. And to conclude, there is no homosexual agenda, there is only a human agenda, and as such, I urge you to support Senate Bill 2. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our very last panel of the evening will be Alex Olenich, Sergei Scherbacher, and Natalia Lazuki. Welcome.
My name is Sergei Scherbakov. I'm here in Oregon since 1993. This is a good state. This is a great country. But the law that they will have to admit, I think it's a little wrong. Because every people in the whole world, even Africa people, they're all good people. God created perfect people, but some of them they went on wrong. Okay, and by accepting this bill, you will actually you will create, you will actually как сказать, устраните мнение публики на их облик, на их как они себя ведут.
You will take away the standard of public and would be supporting their behavior.
Для них же самих это будет лучше, если публика, если они будут знать, как к ним люди относятся.
For them would be a it would be good for them to know how people relate to them in society.
Это будет как индикатор нормальном состоянии или
as an indicator of a normal state or an non-normal state.
Thanks.
Hi, my name is Natalia Lazukin. I'm against this Senate bill because the Bible teaches us to be holy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for translating. You did a lot better in English than I would have done in Russian. I can assure you that. Thank you. Okay,
since the third person didn't show up, my father had signed up. Can I speak?
Yes, you may.
Because I was supposed to speak as well, but the number is really large. My family, we came here
would
from...
I'm
sorry, my name is Anna Zaychenko. I'm a citizen of this country. I work for the Department of Human Services. I don't know what else to say about myself. We immigrated here from Ukraine in 1990. The reason why my family left there is because we grew up in communism, and it opposed where you, if you were Christian, you had a lot of discrimination against you. A lot of people went to jail because of their beliefs. A lot of people you were not allowed to go to college if you were a Christian. You were not allowed to do a lot of things. You were basically, if you want to put it by today's standards, you could maybe work at doing physical labor or something like that. No, you couldn't become anybody in, like you couldn't succeed in life in a way. They wouldn't let you. So we came here to this country to escape that. And then because this country has religious freedom. But then if you look at this bill, in a lot of ways, you are going to hinder our religious freedom. As people said before me, if your moral code then, if you do not agree with them, you're going to get fired, and you're going to get, like in a lot of places already, it's going through high school, I'm currently a college student, you are already discriminated against just for speaking your beliefs, saying that you're Christian, saying that you don't agree with a lot of things, or your morals are this and that, and they don't, if they're, it's not by their standards, you're already discriminated against. And so if you pass this bill, it'll just be the same thing as what was there. I thought the whole Cold War that was going on, I remember America always boasted that they were better than that. How can then this is the same thing, in my opinion. You're going to just, where you think you give, there's in another sense also, though, there's so many bills already for against discrimination. A lot of people keep saying the word hate up here. I don't hate anybody. I'm a very strong Christian, but I don't hate anyone. I love everyone. I know God made everybody, and we're all in His light, and so I respect everybody. I mean, my family gets discriminated. I've seen many people tell my family to go back to our country. I've been told to my face to go back to your country. So I don't think that, you know, I'm no different than anybody else, just as they're no different from anybody else. We already have a number of laws against discrimination. We don't need one that will then, in a sense, just cause more discrimination against something as religion and other people's moral code. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, I'm going to close. We have many witnesses signed up on both sides of this issue still, and my apologies, and a reminder that anyone who wishes to submit written testimony still has an opportunity to do so. But with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 2 and Senate Bill 500. And I will also remind the audience that the fifth member of this committee, Senator Beyer, was unable to be here tonight because of a town hall that he's doing that he was unable to get out of. So with that, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 2. Senator Walker.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 2 to the floor of the Senate with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Walker has moved Senate Bill 2 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank everybody for their testimony this evening and also this afternoon. Madam Chair, I'll be opposing this bill for a number of reasons, none of which have anything to do with me being homophobic or hating anybody, because that's not true. And actually, for the protections people want, there is a bill in the House. I believe Representative Richardson has reintroduced his reciprocal benefits bill from last session, which would cover a lot of that. But the main problem I have, Madam Chair, with this bill is, number one, I think in places it violates the Constitution, and I think it's poorly written and goes way beyond what was intended. It's unfortunate that we did not have an opportunity to do amendments to the bill, but I understand the track that this thing is on, which is unfortunate because this might have had the opportunity to be made an acceptable bill, but we do not have that chance. So therefore, I'll be opposing the bill.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, thank you. It's been a very long night and a very long day, actually. It was an interesting day for me because I take a lot of notes, and sometimes some of the things that were said just blew me off my chair, and I couldn't believe that I was hearing what I was hearing in the year 2007. Things that were happening to people who would be asked to leave a hair salon because they look gay, people who believe their religious rights are being trampled upon. And, you know, I just disagree with that. What Mr. Hinkle wrote in his testimony is the religious exemptions in Senate Bill 2 and Senate Bill 500 do not impose upon the courts or government in general any duty or responsibility that they are not already required to perform. If it were my way, I would say no religious exemption. But you know what? Religions have their exemption under the Constitution of the United States of America. They have the right to their own religion, but they don't have the right to impose discrimination in the workplace. If it's not connected to their religion, they don't have the right to discriminate against someone to get housing or medical care. You know, I wrote a note to myself. People, unfortunately, can be inherently cruel, especially to those who are in any way different. That doesn't give anyone the right to treat them like that. And it becomes our right and our responsibility as a legislative body to legislate against that kind of action against others. We are separate from the church. Church and state are not combined. If you follow your God, whatever that God may be, you follow those ideals. But here in the legislature, those ideals are separate and apart from what we legislate here. I believe this bill is good public policy. It's shocking that we've had people here today testifying who testified in 1973, Madam Chair. I mean, I am honored that they are still hanging in with us, trying to make sure that we bring truth and justice and rights to people who deserve to have basic human rights. I can't imagine that I live in a world that would want to deny those things to people. So I'm wholeheartedly in support of Senate Bill 2, and I'll be proud to vote for it today and on the floor of the Senate, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Senator Pruszynski.
Madam Chair, I'll be supporting SB 2. My belief has always been this will give everyone equal standing, equal rights in the areas that Senator Walker's already talked about, where they won't be discriminated based on sexual orientation in their place of work, accommodations that we make open for all, and the safeguards for religious freedoms are protected with the exemptions that are in here. And I believe that it's a bill that's ready to move forward, and probably should have moved forward decades ago.
Thank you. And just this has been a good discussion today. I know these feelings on both sides are very deeply held. I would just want to clarify for the record that this bill does nothing more than to add another category of people who can expect equal rights in Oregon. I was disturbed by the testimony that some people are discriminated against or harassed because of their religious beliefs. That is already protected under our statutes and our Constitution, and there should be no group that is discriminated against in Oregon. National origin, we've had people with different national origins here in this room tonight. We've had people of color here tonight. We've had old people. We've had young people here tonight. And all of those people are protected. And now our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters and transgender and bisexual will also, if this bill passes, will also enjoy not additional protections, but those very same protections. Is there any other discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair. I had a group of folks from my community come visit me the other day, and I've been sick for 2 weeks, as you know, and I was barely hanging in there, but I was so moved by this young man who was so harassed at his high school that the principal and the administration asked him to drop out of school simply because he was gay. This young man had to quit high school and get his GED and miss out on the high school experience and the opportunities that are afforded to every other person in this state who gets an education because his school district would not make that extra effort to ensure his safety at school. This bill is obviously needed to drive home the message that every child in the state deserves an education. Every individual deserves the right to move about in our society freely and openly as anyone else. And I'm just grateful that we're sticking with it and we're moving forward, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further comments? Would you please call the roll? Oh, we do have a motion, yes. Call the roll.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 2 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I will carry the bill with Senator Avakian.
That one was me.